on this episode of Podigious.
It's like they pass out a memo to the writers, like, well, if you can't think of anything else, just have one of the old Digidestin partners get beat up and then have them save them.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds about right.
Well, I would rather be the Digimon Emperor than Ken the Rocket Itchy Joji.
I don't think it's a Charlie problem.
No, yeah, it's called the Charlie problem. I will prove it to you. I
thought it was supposed to be with trains. Charlie sounds so low stakes. Oh no, a trolley's coming. I'll be run over in like a day. Oh no.
Depends on where in the ocean you throw the body.
Has anyone ever thought about Davis's sideburns?
You're gonna need a password. You can use mine to get on the internet.
Podigious.
Welcome to Podigious, episode 202, Cloudy Afternoon of Friendship.
Adventure 02, episode 7 through 12.
Ken and Morality.
Recorded October 13th, 2014.
I'm your host, Jeff Ruberg, and I'm joined by Ashley McDonald.
Hi.
Asher Soffman.
Hello.
And Andrew Soffman.
Hey.
This episode of Podigious is sponsored by Dark Spirals. Are you fed up with friends and loved ones not appreciating your gifts? This holiday season, give them the gift of a dark spiral and they'll never be able to disobey you again. As the common saying goes, dark spiral. Dark spiral. Hey, so Ashley and I are here.
Yeah, we are. Right here.
Anyway, Ashley and I are here to talk about news and follow-up from the last episode. First off, we have some quick announcements about the show itself. We did our first Ridiculous Dialogue Draft poll last episode, and it was a success. I think we all like the results, and we're going to keep doing it. So keep voting this episode. We're going to announce the winners of last week's at the end of the segment.
Definitely more engagement. Go to the website. Vote next time.
Yeah, get out the vote, Ashley.
Yes, get out and vote.
Rock the vote. Okay, and we are also moving to a bi-weekly release schedule. And people who have been listening since the adventure days, we kind of start off weekly, then went to bi-weekly, then kind of fell into monthly for a while. Now we're going back to bi-weekly, now that we're back on track with Adventure 02, but it's a little bit confusing because we're going to do a special episode next Monday, so this is only going to be out for, so there's going to be a week for the next episode, and then it's going to be bi-weekly for once we reach 2015. So bi-weekly with a special episode next Monday, and starting 2015 we're going to go back to Fridays, so a little weird until then, but yep. And now on to news, which we actually have for
news.
A surprise.
Oh my god.
So anyone who follows us on Facebook or Tumblr, what's the other one? Twitter. Or I've heard about this, but we actually got full concept art. It's called a key visual, basically a poster for the new series. And it has a name now, Digimon Adventure Try.
Try.
Like Monster Hunter Try. Anyway, so it looks really cool. It's a totally different art style than any other series of Digimon. So it looks very different and kind of jarring. What I found jarring was the hair color, but whatever, it's kind of colorblind. And so, I mean, the important, you can go to our show notes to find a link to the image, but the other announcements included in that are the announcements of some of the staff. So we have we know that Atsuya Yuki is doing character designs, and they also did character designs for Suritama and Sensor Roll, which are, I think Sensor Roll is a movie. I'm not exactly sure. I haven't seen either of those.
I don't know.
And series composition is going to be done by Yuko Kakihara, who did series composition for Chihayafuru. Not pronounced it right. Chihayafuru. Chihayafuru 2, which I have not seen but I heard is really good. Heaven's Lost Property, Persona 4 the animation, which are both supposed to be pretty good. I've heard Persona 4 the animation is as good as the game, though. So that's a little troubling. But anyway, and also they did episode scripts for Kids on the Slope and Space Brothers, which are both really good. Actually, I'm watching Space Brothers now. Anyway, and series director is Keitaro Motonaga, who did series direction for Ah My Buddha, Get Packers, School Days, and a lot of shows. I think all those guys are pretty old. It's a definitely interesting influx of talent. I don't think any of these three have done any Digimon-related things. Actually, I don't think that I know that. So that's pretty interesting, and hope that's good news.
This poster is pretty funny. You should go look up Jeff's Podigious tweets about it.
Yeah, I'll link to the tweets on the show notes, or you can just look at our timeline on Twitter. So now we're going to move on to feedback about episode 201. So the first thing we want to talk about was D-terminals, and we kind of expressed some confusion last episode about D-terminals, and we're like, why does Ty have a D-terminal? These are digivices, and they're not really digivices. So we got feedback from Blue Lightning and With a Will and Dot Yawning on Reddit clarifying this. And basically, in Adventure Zero 2, D-terminals are a device in the real world that can be used for IMs or email. And that's why the older kids have them, because it's just devices that kids have in that world. And apparently it's surprising that they're able to hold Digi-Eggs. And according to the Digimon Wiki, Digimon Sovereigns didn't expect them to have these things that could hold Digi-Eggs. And that, I don't know, maybe that'll be a plot point later on. I can't remember.
I don't know if they expected Digi-Eggs. Or for the armored Digi-Eggs.
Well, the Digimon Sovereigns definitely expected Digi-Eggs. It's part of the plan. You'll get to that. You'll hear that. Anyway, right. So, and so we noticed, or I at least noticed this, but we didn't really talk about it, so maybe their listeners would have noticed this, but in the evolution sequence, the Digivolution sequence, they show the Digi-Eggs going from the D-terminal to the Digivice, because that...
Yeah.
Yeah. The data is stored in the D-terminal, and that's how they swap between the two when they get multiple ones or whatever. But, It's I find it confusing because there's a real world thing called a D-terminal, which is a video connector for Japanese electronics, which doesn't exist in the West as far as I know. And it actually started production in the late 90s, so it could be based on that, the name. I don't know, it's kind of confusing. And so the next thing I want to talk about was Dot Yawning on the Digimon subreddit had a bit to say about Gatomon turning evil, which we were talking about basically in the last episode, how she is so much less cool when she's turned evil. Well, when she's not turned, when she's the opposite of evil, when she's turned good. And basically this season, she seems so nerfed. So this is what Dot Yawning had to say. Gatomon totally takes up the evil ranger turns good syndrome. As a villain, they can take on anyone. As a hero, they get to show off a little bit before suddenly being barely able to handle the villain of the week. And yeah, that's basically a summary of Gatomon. I looked up the TV Tropes page for this phenomenon, which is called Redemption Demotion. And it's like in everything. It's pretty common in video games, especially. And I think that's pretty clear because in video games, you have very clearly defined power levels and, you know, like the HP and strength required by a boss fight would be ridiculous as an actual character in the game. So it's pretty easy to just make them ridiculously strong bosses. And then when they join your party, they're just like any other party member. So yeah, I could list like the million different things that we recognize that they're in, but it's, yeah. I mean, the reason I wanted to bring this up is because Gatomon, it's not just about her power level. Like, I would totally expect her power level to be nerfed, and it is by her loss of her tail ring, right? They knew that as a reason to explain why Gatomon can't just beat up everyone. I mean, because she's a champion, she'd be strong with all these arm revolutions, so without that, they wouldn't have any reason to do any arm revolutions. but what bothers me is that her personality is totally different once she turns evil. Ugh, the opposite, once she turns good. And
if she was evil, she'd probably be more interesting.
Right, that's the thing. She had so much more complexity as an evil character. And that's
now she just
sad.
Makes, seriously, she just makes cat jokes.
Like, she is just a vehicle for cat jokes. I mean, that's yeah. Like all she is. So the next thing I want to talk about is ShawneeMac23 wrote in our comment section about distrusting humans, basically about how there is this one scene in the first episode, Enter Flangemon, where Gatomon gets ready to attack Davis because he has a D3, and the only time the Digimon have seen D3s before has been from Ken, and how that's like this wasted potential of, we could have had this cool dynamic of these kids coming in and the Digimon not trusting them, because the only exposure they've had is the Digimon Emperor. And yeah, it's making sad, 'cause that would have been a really cool thing to explore.
I feel like shouldn't Digimon, like most Digimon don't come into contact with humans, shouldn't they always distrust the humans?
Yeah, I guess.
And then it should be exacerbated by like Ken, and then it should be like, you know, we just hate humans.
Yeah, it's true. And I'm trying to remember exactly, it's been a while since I've seen the other series, but that is definitely an aspect explored in Savers. I can't remember if it's in others as well. But yeah, that's a major plot point of Savers. Distrust of humans. Yeah, so ShawneeMac23 pointed out how in the My Smart Arc of Season 1, we have this kind of situation in reverse, where the Digimon partners we know are good, but the human parents don't trust them. And yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty clear that happens. That's a more obvious thing to explore as a writer, because we as humans know not to trust big monsters that look weird and are other. Whereas it's harder to put yourself in the shoes of the Digimon and think about what they would react to Digimon humans come in.
I just feel like it would have been way more interesting to see humans be the other, because I feel like it's always a default narrative of, like, one group sees another group as the other, but it's not always, like, equally that the group that is othered from one perspective is, like, you know.
Right, and it's always the more obvious group that is othered, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it is rare that the group that we think of as the default becomes the other in these kind of situations, which is makes me just more and more think of this, one of those fan fiction scenarios of like, oh, this would have been so much better.
We're all gonna write fanfiction.
The thing is, none of these are actually good fanfiction ideas, because like no one want to read fanfiction that's just like Adventure Zero 2 but slightly different. People want to think,
hey, I could totally rewrite all of Challenge Accepted.
So the next thing I wanted to talk about was a point from Ian Hoffman, our friend, via email, who basically called us out on our... We were complaining about the dramatic irony of Ken and how it's executed poorly. So this is what Ian had to say. Considering the difference between Earth Ken and Emperor Ken is not exactly a Jekyll and Hyde transformation, how could you actually introduce his Earth persona without making it as obvious as it was and without making the Chosen look like idiots for not knowing? There's just very little way of handling it with the exact visual materials we had in the show. And yeah, I mean, I just don't see the reason why we had to know that he was the Emperor before the kids knew. I mean, I guess the kids had to know about him before they actually met him. And it would have been pretty obvious why they were talking to this random person, because they don't really talk about random people. They don't talk about people in the digital world, whatever, or in the real world, whatever. So it would have been a little, like, obvious, but I think that would have been better, preferable to this scenario. And I also just think maybe they didn't have to introduce him before the soccer match. Like, he could have just been this really good soccer player that Davis did not expect, and then was like, oh, this guy's really amazing, I just struggled to keep up with him, and then he looked up him afterwards, you know, and then found out.
Because that's what they're going for, is the, like, they're trying to set up, oh, these kids now look up to Ken, so then when they find out that he's the Digimon Emperor, they're like, oh, we thought you were a really good person, we looked up to you, now you've, like, betrayed us or whatever. But, like, because they overemphasize it so much, it comes off as, like, yeah, whatever. But if it had just been, you know, we met him at a soccer match and he was a good soccer player, and then maybe you find out that he's, like, a genius or whatever throughout that, and then Davis is, like, hero-worshipping him, and then...
Right, like, I feel like...
And then finds out that he's evil, it's, like, that would have been more genuine.
Right, and I feel like having Ken be introduced as a character that they know about before finding out he's a Digimon Emperor would be, like, sillily obvious. Except for the scenario where, like, they meet him in a soccer match where it's, like, he's introduced as an opponent of Davis. Like, it's part of Davis's life, this person.
Yeah.
It's not just, like, someone they heard.
It's, you know, not like they watched a random TV segment and he happened to be on it and they just watched the whole thing and then Yoli is like, oh, he's so cute or whatever.
Right. So it's a combination of, it's frustrating that it's so obvious to the viewer and not obvious to the kids. And the way it's introduced to the kids is very blatantly weird and, like, oh, we're seeing them watch TV, I wonder why. Oh, because there's an important character going to be introduced, you know. So the next piece of feedback I want to talk about was from Magical Game, who was previously Green Chill on our comment section, basically talking about evolution trees. And basically what they're saying is that the way we were discussing Digimon and Digivolutions is more of a linear philosophy that is similar to Pokemon and comes from the Pokemon philosophy of, like, everyone just has one evolution, and it's like you start with a basic form and then you get to the best version of that form. And the Digimon is very not like that. Digimon is all about possibilities and potentials. And so this is what they had to say, I think, is a good summary. So any of us could, no matter if we were a cute little Punimon or a sneaky Zuramon as a baby, grow into a Koromon, Demi-Marimon, or Niaramon as kids, popular Koromon, happy-go-lucky Goemon, or angsty Candlemon as teenagers, and finally end up as a heartbreaking Leomon, overprotective Caesarmon, fun-loving Marimon, way too serious Vegemon, or anything else as adults. The only difference is, it's up to us which way we go once we reach adulthood. And, yeah, so I appreciate this aspect of the games, especially the V-Pets, that it is something that is a cool thing that is different than other monster series. But my perspective is really influenced by the show itself. And the show always presents it as a linear thing. I can't think of any scenario where it's a branching. I mean, I guess there's, like, in Frontier, the, like, beast form and human form, and in Zero Two, the different armor evolutions, but they're all clearly, like, this is Vimon with one egg, this is Vimon with the other egg. Whereas it's not like in this example, Agumon turning into a Marimon or something like that. Those are totally different designs. And I feel like...
It's also that we, like, Digimon that don't have partners, we never really see them.
We never see their life cycle.
Yeah, we never see them de-Digivolve or Digivolve, except for, like, Myotismon becomes...
Yeah, I think we see occasional scenarios of them Digivolving.
Well, and Leomon becomes Saber Leomon.
Right.
Like, those are the two that I
just feel like any evolutions that are shown in the show are always designed to be that kind of, like, the same character powering up, you know? So it kind of reinforces this. I don't think this attitude comes from comparisons to other series or Pokemon in particular. I think it comes from the anime itself, which reinforces it. And, I mean, so I've only played the Digimon World DS game. I haven't played the other games or the V-Pets. And in Digimon World DS, it feels like you have all these different characters and they're just mishmashed together to make it easier for a game. You know, it's like, I have an Agumon, but he can digivolve into a Tyrannomon because, I don't know, we don't know what else to make his rookie form. Like, it feels like they haven't fleshed out every evolutionary line, so they add, like, all these branching possibilities. That's what it feels like. And that's probably not very valid, but it feels like they have all these disparate designs, and it's, like, it's easier, instead of fleshing out all those different lines, they just make them all branching. And So I think it'd be really cool if the show actually explored this, you know, if it actually had branching evolutions as part of the canonical, you know, like, main Digimon or any other Digimon.
It'd be cool if the village of, like, Koromon, you see them digivolve into...
I mean, they could all become different things.
Yeah, some of them become Agumon, some of them become whatever else. Mm. But, like, that's the type of thing that is never in the show, is what I feel.
Right.
Because like, there's only ever one Leomon.
Right. Well, yeah, there are lots of little Digimon, and we never see, like, lots of big Digimon, or very rarely. So the next feedback we want to talk about was Blue Lightning on With the Well, talking about the gender issues we were discussing about Davis's Digi-Egg and how the order of the kids pulling it out. And first thing they had to say was about basically saying that they agreed with us on the problematic nature, but then disagreed with us in regards to saying that TK did something wrong, and... specifically, he says that Kari says, stand aside, it's a woman job. And then after TK fails with the Digi-Egg, and then TK's line is, too bad we don't have a woman here to help after she fails. And Blue Lightning saying that's not problematic because that's more about, like, maturity and Kari not reaching maturity. And I mean, I would tend to agree with that. Like, I don't think TK's line is problematic. He's mostly making fun of her for her being kind of arrogant and like, I can do it, and then failing. She's basically salty, and he's making fun of her being salty, which
Jeff is parsing it into language I understand.
So if for people who don't know, which we found out when we went to college, a lot of people, salty is a term that I think is just from Philadelphia and the surrounding area.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to describe, actually. It's when you are really sure that you're right, and then you're wrong, I guess.
You're super wrong, and then that makes you cry, because you were, like, so...
Okay, it's not about actually crying, it's just
like...
That's where the word comes from.
Tears.
Right. It's just, you're so wrong that, like, you're so salty, man. Anyway. Yeah. Right. So did you have anything to say about that part? Do you agree that it's not really problematic, TK's line in particular? I don't think that's the focus of what we were talking about.
Yeah, I don't feel like that's the focus. Like, his saying, I don't know, I wasn't so concerned with the slight against Kari isn't a woman. It's just the fact that gender was brought up at all as a reason for failure was the problematic point for me.
So the next part of Blue Lightning's comment that I wanted to read out loud was, so they said, actually, a thought occurs to me that this whole scene may not be as insidious as Ashley implied, specifically with regards to the order the kids went in, when you consider the importance of seniority in Japanese culture. Tai and TK have the most experience being digidestined, having been part of the team since the File Island days. Tai being the older of the two gets the most seniority. Kari comes after them since she didn't join the team until the Meiotis One arc, but she ranks ahead of Davis, who just got his Digivice and has never been to the digital world until now. So based on digidestined seniority, Tai should try to lift a Digi-Egg first, followed by TK, then Kari, and finally Davis. Since nobody is given preference based on gender, this might be one of those optimal orderings in terms of gender issues. And yeah, I think we both agree that's, like, a really interesting way to frame it that we hadn't considered before.
Yes, I like this part of the comment. Yeah. I am willing to buy this argument.
And so we actually went back and listened to the Japanese version, which makes no mention of gender. It's just, well, I mean, Tai lifts it separately, and then they come in, and TK tries to lift it. TK's like, I'm going to try to lift it, fails. Kari's like, I'm going to try to lift it, fails. And then Dave's like, let me try. And so that's basically where our frustration comes from, that, like, gender didn't be brought up, that they could have just been like, well, let me try doing it. And then with no gender mentioned, it's like, okay, seniority makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that seniority totally makes sense in that scenario.
Right. So I tried to think about this some more and summarize how I feel about it. And it's that the dub calls attention to gender, and it kind of feels suspicious. It feels like they're trying to cover up for the order American kids would expect. And yes, that's a lot of inferring things. But yeah, I think it's that. Yeah.
I think it's once they mention gender, it brings up, like, all these other things that you notice in the scene that you're like, wait, this made it way more problematic than it ever needed to be.
Right. And I mean, a different point that was raised in different feedback I don't have listed here, but that I don't think we ever meant to say this was, like, the worst thing ever, or, like, it was, like, terrible, or it was, like, a little insidious. I mean, I believe I didn't use the word insidious, and it's, like, this little thing that, like, has a lot of potential impact, but it's not like, this is what is destroying America. I don't
there
think
there are many things destroying America.
Right. I don't think any of us mentioned it in that superlative way. I think we just meant it was bad. And a lot of these like smaller bad things get looked over because they're not as obvious. And the that's basically the pitfall. And so the last part was also from Blue Lightning's comment, talking about D3s and Digigates, which I think we brought up in the unanswered question segment. And we're like, what the hell is going on here? So I'm just going to read it here because he summarizes it pretty concisely. He says, D3s can open a Digigate while the original Digivice cannot. However, a Digigate can just randomly open with, even without a D3. And once the Digigate is open, anyone with a Digivice can go through. Digigates are more likely to open in Japan, specifically in Odaiba, because the barrier between the two worlds is weaker there due to previous events in the Adventure universe. So Tai got lucky and was able to go through a Digigate that opened randomly on its own. Digigates are less likely to open in America because the barrier was stronger there. Eventually one does open, allowing Mimi and Michael to go through in the episode where Yuli gets her second Digi-Egg. Well, spoiler alert. Anyway, I'm kidding. Yeah, I mean, that. I think that pretty concisely explains everything in a way that I have not source-checked this information. I assume this is details that are explained in the Japanese version. They're kind of lost in translation, but it's the kind of thing that makes a lot of sense. It's like, yeah, that seems like the Occam razor explanation for everything. Yep, cool. Cool story, bro.
I think we have more unanswered questions about it in not this episode, a later episode, because Izzy says things don't make any sense, but that's to come.
I just don't know. I think that might make sense.
Oh, maybe we'll be wrong in the future, in the past. It's all very confusing when we record these things.
Yeah, it was recorded in the past, but the future of me editing, and I don't know, we'll get to it soon. It's confusing. So the last thing we want to cover is the feedback, the result of the Ridiculous Dialogue Draft poll thing.
Yeah.
We already drafted. This is the result of the things we drafted.
This is the final winner.
Okay, so we don't have a final winner, actually. It's a three-place tie between Ashley's pick of Yoli and Hawkmon. Hawkmon saying California rolls, rolling all the way back to California. Ha ha. Andrew's pick of, will the owner of the Grey 47 park outside the window please work to the cockpit? Also.
No, Jeffrey. Yours is not the best in this bunch.
Also tied for first place, but clearly the best one is my pick of Ken saying, Wormmon, what is plan B? And Wormmon saying, we can all become friends, because Wormmon is adorable.
You're missing the most important part of this transaction. It's like, Wormmon, what is plan B? Well,
You and Andrew both picked up on, you and Andrew both correct my Ridiculous Dialogue Draft picks with like the most random, unimportant details.
No, that's it's what like, makes it.
No, it does. Anyway.
I'm just trying to help you.
And if we look at the number of votes by hosts, in fourth place is Asher, whose two picks got 3 and 5 votes respectively, for 8 votes total. And then Andrew and Ashley tied for second place with 4 and 9 votes on each of their draft picks. And I won in first place with 9 and 5.
All are wrong.
I think I win at everything.
No, you do not. You definitely don't win with that Wormmon quote. That is not correct.
And you all, listeners, should feel bad because Asher is clearly the favorite of everyone who we get feedback from, and you made him lose.
Yeah, you let him down. What's up? Maybe you're all turning on him.
On to me, because I'm...
No, don't turn to Jeffrey. Wrong.
We pick up as the kids continue their Mind Super game with the Digimon Emperor.
In Episode 7, Guardian Angel... Kari gets trapped in a snow globe with a raging snowstorm of robots. Patamon digivolves into Angemon to make Davis jealous and prove that TK and Kari are everyone's one true pairing. The kids reunite and fail at rescuing Kari from Angemon until he remembers that she's a weird alien and takes off his dark ring.
In Episode 8, Ken's Secret, Ken throws a hissy fit because Davis slide tackled him, so he arranges to murder him after pretending to murder all of his friends. Instead, Davis tackles him again, and we find out that Kari is the 8th Digidev. That Ken is the Digimon Emperor.
In Episode 9, Ken, annoyed that he can't put evil wearable tech on humans, takes up residence in the digital world before the Digidestined are able to harass him in the real world. He captures Greymon and forces him to Digivolve, but accidentally skull Greymon.
In Episode 10, Tai joins the kids to search for Agumon, and they find him right away because Wormmon got jealous and let him go. But the kids suck at running away, and Ken recaptures Agumon with his newest wearable technology, Black Gears 3.0, and digivolves him to Metal Greymon.
In Episode 11, Storm of Friendship, Tai and Matt tag along to inspire Mini-Tai and Mini-Matt to punch each other as they try to rescue Metal Greymon. Davis refuses to hurt his friend Agumon as he punches his friend TK for disagreeing, and struggles with whether he's worthy of the Digi-Egg of Friendship because he's ashamed to ask what the word means. Rangermon frees Metal Greymon, and Ken grumbles that he would have gotten away with it if it weren't for you meddling kids.
In episode 12, The Good, the Bad, and the Digi, Bioman gets thrown in jail for being a bad bird. A motley crew of Sora, Davis, Yoli, and Cody goes to the Digi Wild West and gets thrown in jail along with Bioman. A giant sexist phallic gun frees Sora and Yoli, but forces them to play card games. Somehow, Davis and Vemon end up saving the day.
I'll start off with one of my favorite moments. Well, I have three favorite things.
Wow, it's a lot.
I had two favorite moments and one favorite episode.
You had a favorite episode in this section?
Yeah, what?
Wow.
Okay, so it's weird because, like, I felt the same as you guys. I was like, none of these were good. This is the least bad. And the more I thought about it, the more I was like, actually, it's pretty good.
No.
I mean, it's better than Edamon, but, you know.
Questionable.
The bar is pretty low.
I mean, the episode I chose is pretty good.
All right, tell us what that episode is.
Okay, so the episode was episode 8, Ken's Secret. And the weird reason I enjoyed it at first was it actually had jokes that I enjoyed, which was surprising. So in taking notes for the Ridiculous Dialogue Draft, I had 13 picks from that episode. And the next highest was episode 9 with 4. So, yeah.
There was a lot of dialogue in episode 8. I will give it that.
The dialogue was great in episode 8.
Okay, yeah, I enjoyed it. I won't lie.
And so I looked into this. So I actually made a Google Doc, which I'll have in the show notes, that's a spreadsheet showing the credited staff for the episodes, both in the dub writing and the original Japanese production. And there is a dub writer named Charlotte Fullerton that shows up only in this episode.
In the whole seasons 1 and 2?
So I've only looked into the first 20 episodes of Adventure and the first 20 episodes of Adventure 02.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this took a lot of time to gather, so she might have written other episodes and I just didn't get around to noticing. Yeah, so that's... But it was also co-written by Jeff Nimoy and Bob Buchholz? I don't know how to pronounce his name. But they co-wrote most of the Adventure 02 episodes so far. But also, this episode, the Japanese scenario and everything was written by Satoru Nishizono, who was the head writer of season 1 and didn't actually write any other Adventure 02 episodes in this batch and in any of the other ones I found, the first 21 at least. And he also wrote all the important episodes of season 1, like the first episode, the second episode, the one where Devimon appears, the one where they beat Devimon, the one where Edamon appears, the one where they beat Edamon. So it's like, I get the sense this episode was supposed to be the important episode.
Yeah, I would agree.
Pretty much. Yeah, definitely.
It's weird because, like, revealing that it was Ken, that Ken was Digimon Emperor, is not that big of a deal to the audience at all. We're all like, yeah, duh. Which I guess it was true of Kari, too.
Yeah, but it does change the game for the kids.
Yeah. Well, I wonder, it doesn't really impact them too much.
Well, it also because Ken changes tactics after this.
True, true. Ken totally has changed. And the episode also had interesting questions of morality. Well, slightly interesting. It was interesting seeing Davis's reaction, but yeah, we're going to talk more of that later. And the other favorites were two moments. Ken's retreating at the digital world. I really liked his reaction to basically being frustrated about failure. Thought that was really cool. And I think we'll talk about that later. And also Ty and Matt's fist fight was really cool, which I think was also in episode 8? No, that was episode 9.
9, yeah.
Yeah, the end of episode 9.
Wait, you said Matt and Ty?
Yeah.
That wasn't much of a fight, but I'll...
Okay, it was a punch. A single punch.
A fight.
That wasn't episode 8.
Was it episode 9?
It was the end of episode 9.
Was it the end, the start of episode 10?
It was the end of episode 9. It kind of, like, the scenario bled over. Like, Matt arrived at the end of episode 9, and they punch each other. And then, being in episode 10, they actually go and find Agumon. So, we've seen them get into fistfights a bunch in Adventure, and it felt like this was the culmination of that. You know, like, we've seen them get into fights, and, like, this time they just jumped to the conclusion. They, like, punch, and it's like, you're right. And that was refreshing. It showed that the characters have learned since Adventure and also from the events of Adventure.
That, or it shows that they have learned how to actually speak with their fists. Like, that is an actual language that they have learned through punching each other a lot.
And you don't like that?
No, that was one of the morals of one of these episodes, was like, Yoli is, like, says something about how only boys would think, like, fighting is a way to solve anything or something.
Yeah, yeah.
When TK and Davis are fighting on the...
I think that's 10.
Yeah, whatever it is. I can't even think of the word.
The trail car?
Yeah.
Rail car.
Yeah, I don't think that message wasn't good, I don't think. And I think we'll get into that later, but I liked how it felt like these characters have actually... We see a different side of these characters than before, than in the first season.
I see it more as they, like, they're still the same, but they know each other well enough to take shortcuts in all their conversations. I mean, they are more mature now. Like, Ty doesn't fly off the handle at everything. He flies off the handle a little sometimes.
I'm going to confirm that this punch happened in episode 10, at the end of episode 10.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm totally confused. Yeah, it was offline episode. Yeah, end of episode 10. And then 11 is when there's more punching.
Yeah, but it's TK and Davis.
Right, yeah. I guess the reason I liked it was because in Adventure, we're told many times that Ty and Matt have reconciled and they're like really close, especially like when they get when they both get stabbed with light arrows or whatever. but it really just felt more like they hadn't focused on the differences in a while. And then, you know, once they get into the Dark Master arc, then they start fighting again once they have time to focus on it. And this was the first time felt like they've actually changed. And it's mostly that we haven't seen them for a while. So then any interactions they have feel different. But
yeah, and like they have grown up. Both of them. Yeah. But I think they're... Yeah, no. I take back my butt, I think.
Okay. Anyone else's favorites? Did no one else have favorites? Did no one else like this at all?
I mean, episode 8 was pretty good. I agree with that.
Episode 8, definitely.
I feel like I had a favorite, but I don't remember what it is now. It was a very small favorite. Oh, okay. My favorite, whatever, is how Davis is already getting possessive of Ken. I like that.
How so? In terms of, like, he needs to be one that fights him?
You see it in episode 8, actually, where he's like, whoa, Ken shook my hand, blah, 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 blah. He called me a worthy adversary. Like, he is, like, worthy adversary. He, like, latches onto that. It's like, wow, you're really setting yourself up for the fangirls here.
I felt like that was... Whatever he set up with that was immediately shot down. You know, he was setting up as a role model, not as a equal.
Yeah, yeah. But he's still possessive of Ken. And that, and knowing that he continues to be possessive of Ken later on just makes me chuckle.
Huh. I never thought of it like that later on. It's been a while since I've seen Zero Two and never thought of it through that lens, that he's possessive of him.
Right. Well, I just watched it.
In Hebrew?
Yeah, in Hebrew. Well, it's basically the same as English. Not English and Hebrew, but the dubs are basically the same. English and Hebrew are very different.
Ashley, did you have a favorite episode?
I guess I agree about episode 8, mostly because it's like it's the only person I felt who was emotionally consistent was Ken in running away to the digital world. Like, everybody else just has crazy mood swings.
Yeah, this is not a prime set of consistent episodes here.
Right, I can't tell if people have mood swings or if they're just written out of character all the time.
I think it's the latter.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm like, how did I not notice this as a child, how bad this is?
Well, I wonder as a child how much characterization, at least I don't feel like I picked up on that much of it.
I didn't, but I also definitely liked the characters who were consistent more than the characters who weren't. Like, I didn't warm up to Yoli as a kid. And she definitely has the worst of the writer mood swing deal in this season.
Same thing with Mimi in the last season. I felt similarly.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't take her seriously because there would be times when she would just would be so ridiculous.
Yeah.
I feel like as a kid, the one I appreciated the most was Ken, just because without looking at things with a fine grain, what's the phrase? Fine tooth comb, like we are now.
You don't look at things with a comb, Jeff.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Jeff. I don't know what you've been doing with your life.
Mixed metaphors.
Okay. What is the phrase I'm looking for?
Instead of picking through things with a fine tooth comb, perhaps?
I guess so. So anyway, as a kid not doing that, Ken he goes the farthest. You know, he changes the most, and that's the most obvious. Even in Adventure, like, the characters don't change that much. Like, Ty, I feel like I didn't pick up on any of Ty's characterization changes as a kid, because it's like he goes from being kind of rash guy to being kind of leader guy, and instead of like obnoxious prick to really sensitive whatever. I don't know how to characterize Ken at the end of the season yet. Should we move on to, does anyone else have any favorites about the arc? I had a least favorite thing.
What?
Episode 12.
Yeah.
I don't know. I hate episode 11 the most.
Oh my God.
I'm not sure which one I hate more. I actually like just did not take notes for either of them because I was just like, I can't deal with this.
I feel like episode 11 tried to do things and was just really bad at it. But episode 12 was just like, let's just do a Westerner. Won't that be fun, guys?
Oh my God. I remember the commercials on Fox Kids for this event. They made this one episode an event.
I read on the wiki that they had a marathon for it. It was like,
yes,
it was.
I remember that marathon. Oh my God.
Yes.
And actually, when I was going through the old VHS tapes, and dubbing them to DVD, I actually found some of the commercials for the event, and we're like, oh my god. And then someone actually posted the marathon on YouTube, but just the, you know, the
commercials,
the commercial breaks, like the stuff that we played right then.
The most painful one that I saw recently was the, I can't remember what it was called, but the it had the, what's the guy's name?
Terry Bradshaw.
That's what I thought it was. And he was narrating a conflict between, I think it was between Avengers Zero Two and Tamers.
Yeah.
Do you remember what it was called, Ashley?
Wait, no. What is this?
It was this, like, so this Fox football commentator, Terry Bradshaw, was, what was the name for it? It was on Reddit, like, a couple months ago.
Oh my god, I think I remember this.
It was like, it was a tie-in with the Super Bowl.
Right. It was like a Digi Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's it. Oh, that Fox Kids was ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. I feel like we should have a like version of like Teens React, but for us reacting to whatever Fox Kids commercials we can find.
This is Digi Bowl 2002.
No, just Digimon commercials in general were just ridiculous.
But this is like so painful because he has a script and is like, oh, it's so candid and it's so, ugh.
I think he does a good job with what he was getting.
Oh, it's really fun to watch and how painful it is. General discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Why are we starting with me?
You're first on the list.
In grasping for things to talk about in these episodes, the one thing that I noticed was the different ways that we actually see kids caring about their Digimon that we didn't get quite as much in season one, just because it's like...
They don't have much alone time with them.
Well, I don't know about that. There were... I mean, the season one kids were split up a lot, but their needs were different because the focus was on survival for the most part the entire time. And in here, it's not really like that so much. There are different... the Digimon have different needs. The kids are allowed to notice different things about them. And we see it in Davis and Ken and the difficult way Davis cares for Vimon in frickin' stupid friendship episode. Ugh.
Would you save me? Maybe?
I'm gonna say more about that. I'm gonna defend, like, that.
Where did they get that characterization from? Anyway, but we see a lot of it. Okay, no, I'm gonna save that for later. But, we even see it with the older kids a lot in this set of episodes with Biomon being captured by Starmon and the way Sora, you know, has embraced her motherly caring love crest thing.
Saying love crest makes me think of like Lovecrestian.
Sure.
Never mind.
I know you're getting at Lovecraftian, but
yeah.
It's not there. It's not there, Jeff. And then we also see it with Tai and the fact that Agumon was captured. Oh, and TK with Patamon when Patamon was almost captured.
All the Digimon get captured or hurt in this.
Yes.
All the older Digimon.
Yes.
Except for Gatomon so far and Tentomon.
She had enough already.
That's true.
True.
Well, Gabumon didn't. Oh, do we mean in this section or in this show?
In the show so far.
Oh yeah, a lot of yeah, everyone got beat up. But
it's like they pass out a memo to the writers, like, well, if you can't think of anything else, just have one of the old Digidestined partners get beat up and then have them save them.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
And I think the way that each kid responds to that danger is telling about them. Like, TK goes nuts. Like, he's gonna go rush Metal Greymon by himself. Like, that's a great idea, TK.
It works for Masaru, or Marcus in season 5.
Okay, well, it's not gonna work for TK.
Marcus is a special case. You cannot compare Marcus to any, like, kid show protagonist ever.
It's true.
Are you sure about that?
Pretty much.
I can think of a lot of shonen anime you could compare him
no,
to.
No, but I'm talking about kids anime.
I don't care.
I just feel like Davis and TK, like, switched personalities in that episode.
I would disagree a bit. I think that a lot was happening with characterization that shouldn't have been happening at all, especially with Davis. Davis, like, what was up with Davis in that episode? But TK watched Patamon die.
That's true.
So, I can get, and there's a lot with TK and anger in this coming season, and I like seeing the start of it now.
That's true. I didn't think of it like the seed was planted now.
Well, it's mainly in this arc, though.
What, TK and anger? No, it's not.
Yeah.
I mean, the one big angry TK episode is in this arc, this coming arc.
The wider arc, not this set of episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Digimon Emperor arc.
Yeah.
But it comes back up again later, because TK has some problems, and this show never addresses them. I'm just saying. But the other character Digimon relationship I wanted to point out was Ken and Wormmon. Because I've said before that I like to think of Digimon as not quite a reflection or a part of the kids, but something that stands for something that they are that they don't necessarily show in and of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Wormmon is very kind. He's very caring. He doesn't look like much. And Ken just, like, can't stand him right now. And the way that Ken hates Wormmon, I feel, is a reflection of the way Ken kind of hates himself.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then it's, like, it's seeing his weak side.
Yeah.
And
it's very blatant.
Yeah.
And on top of his, he wants affection from Ken.
Yeah.
I guess that's another thing he hates, that he hates the idea of someone reaching out for affection.
And he hates the idea that he needs affection as well. Ken hates the idea that he needs...
He needs anyone.
Love. He needs... Yeah.
Ken hates affection.
He does.
Well, Ken hates everything right now.
That's true. Well, he likes himself. Well, no. He hates himself.
No, he does not like himself.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he likes winning. He likes winning, and he likes big Digimon. He likes being strong. I just pay attention to how kids treat their Digimon in this season, because I feel that where season one was about growing up in a way where you hit your most basic needs, season two is a little more complex, and it's a little more about growing out and becoming who you are. In the way that the Crests were about becoming who you are, this is more so, because you're already stable, you've already got your home, you got your food covered, you're ready to do more.
It's gonna take some convincing to show me that there is more interesting characterization to the characters other than Ken, but we'll see as we go along.
Well, Ken is obviously the most...
Ken's just the best in everything, in general.
It's true.
Except for Emmon. Except for everything in Tamers.
I basically gathered, I mean, I don't think they ever touch on how Emerald Evolution works. It's just like a thing.
Really, you gathered it because, like, they don't tell you anything.
Yeah.
And it's inconsistent.
Actually, they do. The one thing they do tell you is that it's not normal Digivolution.
Yeah.
Like, that's the one thing it is. It's not that.
I just assume they're all, like, champion level strength.
They're technically champion level, but I think they are lower than champion level.
Really?
No, I don't think there is technically one level of armor, because when you think about it, one of them is a Royal Knight.
Are we talking about Magnemon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't gotten to him yet.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah, and so the reason I assume that they are a tier, and I think this is generally accepted as canon, that they're a tier between Rookie and Champion, is that after this arc, once the Digimon Emperor is out of the way, spoiler alert, he gets defeated, spoiler alert, anyway, they are able to Digivolve to Champion, and it's considered a better thing. And at that point, they always do that instead of going to their, I think they occasionally go back to their armor Digivolutions, but it's considered a step up, so...
Oh, yeah, it's true.
It's usually, like, Cody needing a water thing.
Yeah.
That's usually what it is at that point.
Which is interesting that they use it tactically, but we'll get into that when it happens.
This is some sucky Digivolving, then.
But, I mean, like, in this arc, it makes no... Like, why is Rageramon more desired than Garurumon? Garurumon is a stronger Digimon.
I mean, wasn't it implied that they need both of them?
But all that Garurumon did was distract Minel Greymon. Like, it was ridiculous.
Well, he bit the Dark Spiral a few times. He might have weakened the metal.
He also saved Patamon.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. Okay, that was ridiculous. He in one fell swoop, like, picked up Patamon in his mouth, destroyed destroyed a dark ring, did something else.
Look, are you questioning how awesome Garurumon is?
Yeah, Garurumon is the best.
Okay, this isn't Were Garurumon. Don't go crazy. He doesn't have pants on, so I don't see how he can be that cool.
Oh, that's true.
I thought that there's a lot in this arc. and the setting up of the season in general that is echoing adventure very purposefully. So in particular in this arc, you get the Andromon episode at episode 7, which is similar to the Andromon episode in Adventure episode 5. We get Davis and TK fighting in episode 11, similar to Ty and Matt fighting in episode 9. We get them locked in the cell in the Western episode in episode 12, which is similar to Joe and Sora being locked with the Bakuman in episode 11 of Adventure. And the thing it reminded me of was a quote from George Lucas describing the prequels of Star Wars, which is not a good thing to be compared to, but he described the prequels as he was playing them as like rhyming with the old series. And I think it's an example of how that's bad. I originally saw this quote from George Lucas, which I'll have a YouTube video link to his quote and also a link to this review where I heard it, which is the Red Letter Media reviews. Have any of you seen them?
No.
It's like really long epic reviews that are longer than the actual movies, I think, tearing them apart and also some weird stuff, but doing really interesting and funny tearing apart of the movies. And anyway, this concept of just like, it's just rehashing the same elements and not doing anything interesting with them. And it's a problem with the Star Wars prequels. And I think it's also a problem with this too. It's just reusing things to be like, you remember this, right? Like, wasn't that cool?
Yeah, I agree. Except for, I don't know. I liked that Ken brought back Skull Greymon just because it raises some questions about what Ken is able to do with his frickin' D3.
Well, I think it raises questions that are just unanswered questions.
Yeah, well, I like thinking about that stuff.
I was going to point that Metal Greymon and Skull Greymon were actually thrown in to break the rhyme. You know, it's like, we get used to this like pace of like, okay, we're rehashing the same stuff at generally the same pace. And then it's like, here's this thing that happened like, you know, 10 episodes later or whatever. It's like, we haven't even got to champion level and we already have ultimates. So I thought that was a cool way to mix it up. I think there are other issues with misusing Skull Greymon, but, and I do think it's a little gimmicky to throw it in so soon to be like, ha, you didn't expect this so soon. But it was at least interesting.
Of course it was, Jeffrey. It would be interesting.
Everything's interesting.
I'm actually counting how many times we say that word this time.
Oh no. Well, actually, ultimates appear very early.
In the first season?
Yeah, Manzaemon.
Manzaemon and Andromon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess both of those were, I thought, poorly presented. Like, without looking things up as a viewer, I don't think people would even know that they were ultimates, because it was just attack once and defeat the black, or got rid of the black gear. I mean, at least Andromon took a couple different Digimon fighting him to beat, but Manzaemon just, like, Togemon just punched him and got the black gear out. Whereas at least Metal Greymon, it's like, they hype it up as a big threat.
Well, it was a big threat, because this was their friend.
Yeah, the next thing I want to talk about was about tactics and how just terrible these kids are this whole season. Ugh.
Okay, no. Ken is good at tactics.
True. Okay. Ken is the only good part of the season.
Whoa, that is harsh.
That's not true.
Okay, but Ken is really good.
Ken is very good.
It kind of makes up for everything else, but he's still the only good part.
He's like, he's definitely the best part of it. Everyone else is kind of mediocre and you kind of have to like dig around for something to latch onto that's...
True, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, no, Ty had better tactics way back in episode, what, 4 of Digimon Adventure, the first one. Yeah, these guys can't fight.
It's not so much, I don't think it's so much that the these kids are worse at it. It's that there are situations are set up in a way that there are very clear things they could do to be better that they don't do. Like, they'll be fighting, you know, like 5 Digimon that are under control of black, or under control of dark rings, and they, one Digimon, while like 4 of their Digimon could distract those guys, and one could run around and destroy the control spire, and then they'd be done with it, and that'd be the end of it. But no, they have to destroy all of them, and like, they don't seem to actually attack the dark rings. They just attack the Digimon, and it's like, oh, whoops, we end up destroying it, cool. And it's just like common sense.
They don't have any.
And it's not that the characters don't have it, it's that the writers, they set up scenarios where there are very obvious routes around it that people don't do.
Mm-hmm.
And this happens a lot in stories. So I'm thinking in particular of an essay from Film Crit Hulk about plot holes, and that he generally doesn't like the way people will write off a movie because of plot holes, because you kind of have to like, you always have to suspend disbelief. And if you can go along the rest of the movie and it was like a good ride,
You don't have to.
Well, okay, but that, like, it shouldn't destroy your enjoyment of the movie, because, like, so the example he gives in this essay, which I'll link in the show notes, is about Looper. So,
oh god,
this isn't spoilers for Looper, but the premise of Looper is that there's a mafia in the future sends people back in time to be disposed of in the past, so that they can't be found in the future, so that they dispose of the bodies cleanly. And this plot hole brought up is that, why don't they just dump them in the ocean? And it's like, that's a cleaner, easier solution than time travel. And his answer, like, why don't they do that, is because there wouldn't be a movie then. And it's, I feel like that is an example of...
Also, it's not that great. I mean, depends on where in the ocean you throw the body.
Right, I was considering, like, the middle of the ocean.
All right.
But it's like, that seems like a far-fetched thing. Like, to go from this movie about time travel to be like, why don't they just go to the ocean? It's... This is like, so the solution to these fights is right in front of them. The control spire is right there staring them in the face every time, and they always think to do it last. And it's just like, why doesn't one of them just, like, it's so simple.
Well, it's kind of hard if they're attacking you.
That's true. If they're always in the defensive, I could see that.
Well, yeah.
And Ken does throw a lot of Digimon at them.
Yeah, it's always like, here are 7 Tyrannomon.
Right?
Deal with it.
Dark Tyrannomon. Apparently, Dark Tyrannomon is only a champion level.
Yeah, I noticed that too this time. Like,
well, it's just a virus version of Tyrannomon.
But why was Lilymon necessary to defeat the Dark Tyrannomon in season 1?
Because she was there.
Because girls.
Togemon took on Monzaemon on Ultimate and then couldn't take on a champion?
I think somewhere along the line, Dark Tyrannomon once must have been Ultimate. It's bigger than regular Tyrannomon.
Digimon is just complicated.
Yeah, that might be it.
And by complicated, we mean inconsistent.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, or extra simple in a way that they don't think about it.
The next thing I want to talk about was about the whole fighting friends theme of this, which was so... We all hated it, right?
Yeah.
That episode, the episode...
Yeah. Yeah.
With Rageramon.
Yeah.
So it was ridiculous.
I didn't hate it as much as you guys.
I think I hate it more than I hate the Wild West episode.
I definitely hate it more than I hated that Wild West episode.
So I like the idea that it was trying to explore of, like, teaching that you should... It's an interesting idea to explore, that maybe it is necessary to hurt your friends to help them in the end. I think it's a slightly problematic message to teach, because it kind of teaches you to be, like, obnoxious to your friends. It
teaches you to actually, like, attack your friends.
Well...
But yeah. That's not the issue I take with it.
The issue I take with it is Davis's characterization is just completely out of left field. It makes no sense.
No, I hate everything about it.
It's just not a good episode.
It makes no sense for Davis. It makes no sense from anyone's perspective. Like,
no, nothing made sense about that episode.
Well, it was just a crisis.
For people who haven't seen it recently, well, so the situation is that Agumon gets captured and is turned into a Metal Greymon by Ken, and everyone is like, we need to go fight him and destroy the Dark Spiral on him. And out of the blue, Davis is like, but Agumon's my friend, I can't attack him. And as I pointed out in writing the recap, he says this after, like, punching TK, or trying to punch TK in the face.
Well, he's not friends with TK. Except for the fact where he is.
Yeah, he's not TN, TA, TM, TG, whatever.
First of all, he does know TK's name. When TK was in trouble, he actually went and said TK or whatever. And also, like, TK and Kari are very supportive of Davis when, like, the situation calls for it. They are obviously his friends.
Kari is grossly supportive of him.
Yeah, Kari's very nice to Davis. She just doesn't want anything to do with his romantic advances.
As she should not.
Yeah, he's... Yeah.
The girls in this episode, like, didn't do anything. They just stood there.
Yeah.
There were girls?
And Cody, right? What did Cody do?
Which episode was it?
Episode 11.
There was another episode 7. Like, Cody had really valid points, like, a couple times, and everyone just, like, shut up, Cody, you're a little kid.
Yeah, that happens... It seems to happen a lot, yeah.
Like, multiple times, and I was like, guys, what's wrong with you?
The only significant thing I can think of Cody doing in this episode was that he got to try to pick up the Digi Egg of Friendship, like, second, like, after Matt or something.
Yeah, Ty was like, you try, Cody.
He's such a good friend.
I mean, it's just, okay, so from a logic perspective, all their Digimon are armor Digivolutions. They are not as strong as champions, and they are afraid of hurting an ultimate. Like, they have had countless fights between ultimate to ultimate, where the ultimate has come out okay in the end, and they're afraid of...
Yeah.
they attack Digimon and destroy the dark ring spiral, whatever, and then that Digimon is perfectly fine. Like, why is there a moral conundrum now?
Right, like,
because Agumon's their friend.
Oh.
I wonder if it's even like worth discussing, because it's so painfully obvious. Like, anyone who watches this should be like, this is ridiculous.
Well, to be honest, it's not just that Agumon's their friend, it's Agumon's trying to brutally kill them.
But then shouldn't they want to defeat him more?
Oh, so they don't want to go up against Agumon because he's like the strongest character in season one. Is that what you're saying?
That's not what I was trying to say, but that does sound like what I said.
Oh, what were you trying to say? I think my point is also valid.
But you also have to keep in mind that the last episode, well, the Skull, when he became Skull Greymon, he almost pretty much caused a nuclear explosion.
But they don't seem to be afraid of him from like a he'll beat us perspective. They seem, and it's just Stavis, so let's just not say they. He is afraid of hurting him. He's not afraid of losing to him.
Well, they might accidentally kill him.
But how? As Armored Digivolutions attacking an ultimate level.
Yeah, I think the point is like, this season, we have not been shown, like in season one, it's very clear when they kill a Digimon. That has not been shown at all in this season. Every time they attack a Digimon, it's...
They do not kill.
Yeah, they only destroy the Dark Ring.
Yeah, but what if it got to the point where they had to kill?
I guess. Yeah.
I'm just not buying it.
I guess I can see that, but I don't see how they could have.
I would take that a step further and ask, what if they don't want to make Agumon feel guilty for hurting them? Because Agumon is really scary.
Yeah. I could see that.
But they never bring it up, so I'm...
Right, it's a big stretch.
Reluctant to say that, yeah. Like, it would be a valid concern.
I don't know.
I would also like to point out that Ken got Agumon all the way to Ultimate when the crests are gone. Like, what kind of ridiculous power does this kid have? I love Ken.
I forgot about that.
Magic.
It's the Digivice. It's the black Digivice.
It's also Ken. Are you, like, Ken has that Digivice. He made that Digivice happen.
It's the black Digivice. Spoiler.
It has some... Yeah, spoilers. It has something to do with his own abilities, okay?
He's a genius.
Well, he wasn't always a genius, but I am firmly of the belief that the Digimon and the D3s and the Digivices all, you know, tie back to...
Wait, you... No.
What?
You can't just not have been a genius before. I don't buy this.
Ashley, calm down. It's going to be explained.
Eventually.
I'm not buying this.
I won't say anything else then.
Ashley, it's the Dark Spore. Calm down. He gets a seed planted in his brain.
All right, fine. I'll buy that.
Actually, in his neck. In his neck.
I also find it ridiculous how the episode with Rageman was exploring the idea that, like, what if you have to hurt your friends to help them? And then the recap for the next episode just, like, did not get the memo about that, apparently. I'm trying to remember what Kari said as she was recapping last episode. She said that Davis learned you need to make sacrifices for friends, which is not at all what happened.
Yeah, I was like, what did he sacrifice? He sacrificed nothing.
Be mine, I'm your friend!
Well, to be honest, those opening things are weird.
Yeah, they're always weird. I was wondering, like, who writes them, especially when... So, now that I have this list of the staff writers, episode 11, Storm of Friendship, was written by Stephen Rollman and the two, Jeff Nimoy and Bob Buchholz. And episode 12 was written by Michael Sorich? And those two. So I'm like, which one? Who is it? It would be weird to like not have the story finalized for one episode and then have the next person have to write a recap possibly before.
Actually, I wouldn't be surprised if that did happen.
Yeah. We're just speculating about that though. I wish I knew more about the internals.
Well, let's not talk about Saban.
The one thing I wanted to talk about shipping is I had a question for the shipping expert.
Yes.
Who is more popular in the fandom? Tai and Matt, which I assume is Taito, right?
Taito.
And or Davis and Ken.
Which is Dai Ken.
Davis and Ken.
I would say Taito just because it came first.
Interesting.
No, I'm pretty sure Dai Ken is...
Tai Ken. Oh, Tai Ken. We're getting exotic
now.
No, a new one.
No, it's not a new one. That exists. Everything exists.
It does.
But I think it's Taito.
Really?
I think, yeah, like, in the fandom overall.
I don't know. I'm going on eBay right now.
I do think that Dai Ken may be more popular on Tumblr. Because, I mean, Yeah, you know, I will say that. I would say there's more to latch onto as a shipper in Dai Ken than there is in Taito, because you know. Well, you'll see. You'll see. You'll see.
I am immediately regretting the decision to look go on eBay to see the Digimon Doujinshi.
I want to see the Digimon Doujinshi.
What is that?
Just a bunch of... wow, I'm finding a lot of Ty and Davis.
You know what? I'm going to go look on fanfiction.net. See.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Oh, you're doing that? Then I'm going to look at archives of our own. Okay, you tell me what you find.
What is Matt's Japanese name?
Yamato.
Oh god, I just found Tike and Ken.
Oh yeah.
I seriously just found Tike and Ken.
You're surprised by this? I already knew about that doujinshi,
okay,
actually.
Wait. There are only like 10 Ken Davis stories on fanfiction.net, but there are 1,000.7 for Ty and Matt.
That doesn't make any sense, but I do believe that there was a lot of Taito. I remember being on fanfiction.net back in the day.
Let me redo it.
Let me check,
Oh god, I just found something that I'm not even gonna say now.
No, yeah, every time I put in Daisuke, Davis, and Ken, it only says there's 10.
Ty, Matt. Really?
Yeah.
That's actually surprising.
Really? I'm finding a lot. Well, these are imported.
Okay, there are... On Archive of Our Own, which is a newer fanfiction site, there are 40 Taito works. And let's look for Daisuke Ken. Ooh, this one ships Davis in TK. That's not what I'm looking for. And there are 48 works in Ken, in Daiken. So, but that's still nothing compared to 1,000 and what? 1,008? Taito works on fanfiction.net, which was more active.
To 10.
Wait, I want to say that that means that Taito is the ship that launched
1,000 fix. Yeah.
That didn't work very well.
Failure.
Oh my god. There's like, I just changed the search and there's like 340 for Digimon Yaoi. On eBay, which can fluctuate.
On eBay? What's on eBay?
Do you know what doujinshi is, Jeff?
No.
Oh, sad.
Oh, it's fan-made manga.
Oh.
So, usually shipping.
Like, sold through eBay?
Yeah. I mean, doujinshi is legal in Japan. Making money off of fan works is legal in Japan.
Well, they sort of do the same thing here. It's just copyright is very sketchy.
I'm just surprised it's, like, legit enough to, like, be bound and printed in the real world.
Well, it's done by them. It's not done by, like, an actual publisher.
Uh-huh.
And they're printed in limited quantities, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, if you go to an anime convention, you'll see a lot of doujinshi.
It's like making a parody, like those stupid parody movies of like Epic Movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly like that.
All right, so this week we're trying out a new segment, which may or may not actually end up in the final thing. And it's called Reaction Corner. And the idea is that we all come into it with small scale things to just point out and see everyone else's reactions to them. And for now, it's just me, because hopefully if we keep doing this in the future, everyone will have things to share. But anyway, should I even do the Digimon thing, since we already all saw it and no one liked it? I won't do that one.
The what?
The Digimon without drills. He looks so creepy.
Did not.
I know, right?
Yes, Andrew agrees with me.
Ugh.
I've always thought that was weird.
Okay, so whatever. For context, yesterday, before we started recording, I sent an image of Digimon without drills, and I was like, look how creepy this looks. And
well, actually, it's not creepy, it's just weird.
Yeah, it's just like, ugh, you shouldn't do that. Like, you're naked. Yeah, and Asher and Ashley were like, whatever, it's just Digimon.
Who is it? Who is this thing?
Whatever.
So the next thing I had to share was this. So actually, do you remember what episode it was? I'm talking about the Matt in the kitchen thing.
It was either 7 or 8.
I think it was 7.
Yeah, I think it was 7. I think it was the first one.
It was 7, because it was the Andromon episode.
Oh, yeah, it was the Andromon.
So this is Matt and his dad are just in their apartment. Matt is cooking for his dad, but it's like Matt's kind of in the background and you see him from the side and he has blonde hair and he's wearing an apron and he's in the kitchen. And my first reaction seeing Matt's dad and this blonde person in the kitchen was, why are his parents together again? And
his mom's taller.
Yeah, Jeff, this was just you.
I didn't have his reaction.
Not even the slight. Like, I mean, no. I think it was a quirk of like I don't know what was in my mind at the time that made me think this really sexist thing that made me leap from...
You were probably just tired.
Probably. But that's not a good thing in terms of, like, I'm more sexist when I'm tired. I assume that people in the kitchen are women more when I'm tired. That's kind of weird.
You're a terrible person.
Yeah, not having sexist thoughts does not make you a terrible person. Has anyone ever thought about Davis's sideburns?
Maybe.
You're a thing that exists.
Well, I have actually a bit, but only because I draw him.
But look at those sideburns!
That's not that ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
No, they kind of look like, they kind of make it look like his hair is a helmet, and those are the straps.
Good point.
It's a motorcycle helmet.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Which fits with his jacket, kind of.
Wait, Ashley, you think those aren't ridiculous?
Nope.
You're the ridiculous.
So used to anime designs that, like, that is whatever.
Oh, but if he had the little hair thing where, like, the crisscross in front, you'd be so pissed off.
What?
When it's, like, the two pieces of hair that, like, cross over each other and bend around.
Well, I've never seen that one before until you were watching whatever. That one's weird.
This was creepy. Where is this? So when Davis is bowing down to Ken, his goggle strap totally looks like a dark ring.
That would be symbolic of how he was so infatuated with Ken for like 10 minutes.
Well, he's also being like told to bow down and like obey him and stuff. So
yeah,
well, that's just the elastic.
It's pretty convenient that I don't think it was purposeful at all. It was just super convenient.
I don't either.
That's okay. We'll read into the symbolism.
This happened from the start of the season, or did it just start happening where in the opening sequence, the
thing starts?
Yeah.
I think that just happened.
It started in this. It's not your imagination.
I could have just gone back and checked, I guess, but
I didn't even notice.
I was like, whoa, when did that start happening?
Actually, it makes me appreciate that part of the song a lot more.
Seriously?
Yeah, like, it's interactive. I don't know.
No, it's not. It's so stupid.
But it's like, I like it when openings are actually timed to their music. I think it doesn't actually happen that often.
This is like the cheapest thing.
I guess the thing is that the is so stupid. I hate it so much that when it's like this made it marginally cooler, it's like such a big deal.
You hated it?
I don't think I watched the openings this time around.
I only noticed it in one, and I was like, I don't know.
I was too lazy to skip through the opening.
Wow.
Netflix sometimes like just skips past the opening for me. I don't know. Okay, the last thing I had was, look at this and tell me it's not adorable.
Okay, I will.
Yeah, okay. Oh, God. No, that was adorable.
So it's Starmon's lunchbox from Ken? Or I don't know if it's from Ken or what, or if he's just admiring Ken.
I think he may just be admiring Ken. I don't think Ken made that.
I think it's implied that it's from Ken in the dub.
Really? Maybe it's from Wormmon.
Oh, that'd be sweet.
Yeah, it would make sense if it was from Wormmon.
How could Wormmon make those sandwiches?
What do you mean?
Why is Wormmon called Wormmon? He's a caterpillar.
Ashley, that's an unanswered question. Okay, so the next segment is gender.
Yay.
Oh, goody.
Who's leading this? Are we all just going to complain?
I don't have anything in particular to start with.
Really?
I mean, there's just like, where do you start with this? Like,
yeah, I'm just gonna pick one off things that I observed, like how Kari was perfectly able to fend off the Gardramon, and then as soon as she saw Davis and TK, she gets hit. Yeah. And I'm like, what?
Does she get hit because she's looking at them, or just because like they're around?
I don't know. Gatomon should be doing your own thing.
I think it's just convenient timing.
I'm just surprised she lasted that long, or anyone would last that long.
She's badass. Why wouldn't she last that long?
Yeah, but there's like hundreds of Gardramon.
Yeah, so?
Why didn't she head for an exit?
Yeah, there was that question too.
Well, where was the exit?
Wherever they entered.
Yeah, wherever.
Well, they entered through a...
There was one guard at the entrance.
Yeah. I think he's saying where Davis and TK entered.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think many people would want to invade that place, because that place is a maze.
It's a good thing she could fly through it, so it didn't really matter that it was a maze.
Wait, why didn't she just fly up?
What was a dome?
There was a dome.
Yeah. Why didn't she just fly up? She could see the whole city.
Yeah, and then find the exit. And
there are many questions.
It was not very well thought out. My main complaint with Kairi in this arc was this behavior that I only started noticing, and I kind of want to go back and see if it happened more in the first set too, but I don't have time. So tell me if anyone else noticed it. Was that after Skull Greymon is subdued and Ken is flying away with Agu?
Skull Greymon was not subdued.
Okay, after he was attacked and then de-digivolved.
No, he just lost all the energy to maintain that form.
That's what I mean. Ken flies with Agumon, and Kairi shouts, TK Davis, somebody do something, they're getting away.
That was the only time I noticed that, and I was like, wow, really? Really?
I found it weird because at first I was like, I didn't notice it. I was like, uh-huh. Wait, what did she just say? What?
Oh, I noticed it.
Wait, when was this?
Episode
9.
One of the episodes I didn't write any notes for.
Yeah, so. Episode 9. It's the one where Ken ran away.
Yeah, it's episode 9.
Whatever.
And it's like, calling out to TK and Dave, like, why? Why call out in general? Why not go do something herself? Like, it's just...
Why not ask Gil Lee, who has a Digimon who can fly?
She has a Digimon who can fly, too.
There's 3 Digimon that can fly on this... Unless 4 if you count Digmon. Can Digmon technically fly?
No, he can't.
No.
I think he has wings, though.
I think he does.
He does, but he can't fly with them.
Are you sure?
Yes, he cannot fly. No, he cannot fly. Oh my god, I'm not fighting you on this.
Okay, Digmon can jump really high.
So can Ken. Ken can just, like, jump on top of an air balloon.
Ken, why didn't you do something?
Ken is a Power Ranger.
I'd believe it.
Jumping into his Zord. Dragon Zord.
I think my favorite gender thing was at the end of episode 11, where it went from Matt saying, way to go, Davis, you're one of the team. Then Davis turns around to everybody else and says, did you see that? I got a noogie. Now I'm one of the guys. Which goes to Vemon saying, I have a question.
Well, Demi Vemon.
Oh yeah, whatever. Demi Vemon says, I have a question. If you're one of the guys now, does that mean you were one of the girls before? And how come you never told me about it? I wish you would make up your mind.
Okay, so I'm going to defend this.
Yeah?
As not being a problematic use of language. So I'm thinking in particular of a podcast I listened to. I think I'll find the episode and put it in the show notes. Talking about gendered pronouns. And they also talk about guy and how it is increasingly being used as more of a gender neutral group kind of thing.
I don't know. I've always associated with it as gender neutral.
Right. It's definitely sticky because like especially writing emails and stuff, I'll like think like, hey, guys. And I'm like, wait, no, that is exclusive to women. Like I'll rearrange it in case it could be misinterpreted. But yeah, it's the kind of thing that can be interpreted multiple ways. And I think it's you're not wrong in leaping to the gendered use because he's like, you just got a nookie and he's like, it's a very guy bro-y kind of thing.
Well, it's just the transition from team, which is clearly gender neutral, to guys, to Vemon pointing out how it is a gendered pronoun.
Right, but I read that as like, Davis is saying a synonym for team, and Demi Vemon's the one who's like, doesn't that word mean something else?
I mean, no, but I don't think in the context that he uses it, he means that at all. He's like, I'm now part of Matt and Ty's group. Like, I am literally one of the guys.
Yeah, I would agree.
That's how I interpreted it.
Yeah,
I think, it does sound like that.
Yeah, it's true. I think when you say like, hey guys, that is much less, that's much more gender neutral. But like one of the guys, that definitely feels more gendered.
Yeah, there's no, that's not like, I'm one of the, like, I wouldn't go up to a team of girls and be like, I'm one of the guys now.
Right, but I'm wondering if there's anything problematic about that. You know, it's like, he's living up to his role models. And that doesn't need to be gendered, but I don't think that is... I mean, I guess it is implying that to be like Matt and Ty, you have to be a guy, which is problematic.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, yeah, the problematic part for me was the, like, it's clearly supposed to be a joke on Beemon's part, but, like, it's just, like, if you're one of the guys now, does that mean you were one of the girls before? Is like, oh, Davis has upgraded to being a guy now, right, or whatever. Right.
Oh, really? I mean, I read Demi Vemon's joke as actually poking fun at it. You know, that he was saying, I'm one of the guys, and Demi Vemon was like...
But it's still implying that the structure is there.
Yeah.
But I thought he was, like, you know, saying the structure was ridiculous.
But it's still there.
I mean, he was, because it's what the Digimon do with gender, but, like...
Okay, well, right.
It's still there.
So there's a difference, then, between, like, this show reproducing problematic stuff and poking fun at it and having something to say about it. And I feel like it did have something to say about it.
I don't know if it has anything to say. It just wants to make cheap jokes.
Well, I felt like it was kind of like Demi-Vimon calling him out for...
I just feel like Demi-Vimon is the one that always... Because I feel like the only other joke I can remember is like in episode 7 or whatever, when he's talking to Patamon, Patamon's like, why aren't Davis and TK like each other? And
Vimon was like, something about human girls.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
He's like, something about Kari. Something about human girls makes human boys go crazy or something.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember that one.
Demi-Vimon's just trying to learn what gender is.
Maybe.
Well, Demi-Vimon's just trying to learn everything about humans.
I don't think Demi-Vimon actually cares about learning, though.
Well, that's true.
I don't even want to touch this Wild West episode.
Yeah, can't let...
Okay, the one thing I liked about that was that, like, Deputymon was saving the kids. Saved Sora and Yuli. And yet they did not consider... They didn't consider themselves to be saved because he was so sexist. That it was like, we've been saved.
That's true. I enjoyed their reactions. I enjoyed when Deputymon and Starmon are having their...
Duel.
Little duel thing that they're like, go whoever. Like, screw it.
I mean, I don't like how they are not... Like, they're completely in control again. Like, they have their Digimon stuff. They could fight back against Deputymon and be like, no, we're leaving.
They were hungry and Biomon was all beat up.
Why were they hungry again? Because they rushed into the digital world?
I don't remember. Because they were gonna have milk and then they didn't.
They did have milk though, didn't they?
Did they actually have a minute to drink the milk? I don't think they did.
Yeah, they had like a whole conversation with Starmon.
Oh, well then I don't know.
Yeah, but then they were in the cell for a while, so even if they did have the milk, it wouldn't matter.
Mm. Well, Biomon didn't have any milk because Biomon was already in jail.
Yeah. Biomon didn't get to drink the mug of milk that shattered on sand.
Yeah. That was a cruel moment.
Yeah, I mean, I liked how it represented this, like, white knight who was... It showed that he was stupid for being so sexist, and it represented that wanting to save women for your own gain is bad and stupid.
I didn't like the reasons that he wanted to save them, though. He's like, boys cheat. I want to win at a game,
right.
And the only way I can win at a game is by playing against girls, apparently.
I liked, though, how it forced them to cheat. Like... It was a weird cycle.
Well, to be honest, were they really being saved by him?
No.
Because technically, I think he was the sheriff, one like co-sheriff of that jail.
He's the deputy.
Well, yeah, the deputy of that cell. Well, jail. So it was more like he just...
Temporarily letting them out?
But he didn't have a black ear on, or a black ring, a dark ring.
Maybe because the Digimon Emperor deemed him to be too stupid. Like, not worth it.
Too sexist. You're so sexist, you don't even need a dark ring.
Oh, boy.
I guess he didn't see Digimon as a threat.
Neither do I.
Are we done with gender? Is gender solved?
No.
You figured it out?
Yes, gender is definitely solved.
What is gender?
Alright, so Ken, we all like him the most. Probably because he's the most, like, complex person and consistent. But I guess the part that I liked the most about episode 8 is this harping on... I mean, it's good and bad. It's they harp on how Ken looks so normal. And they're so shocked that this kid who looks so normal could be so evil. And it's like, I recently read a... essay by Roxane Gay, who's really awesome, where she talks about, you know, I forget his name, Tsarnaev, who the Boston Marathon bomber guy, and how he was like, you know, on the cover of, yeah, he was on the cover of Rolling Stone, and everybody was like, why did you put him on here? And everybody's like, oh, he's so hot looking, he's such a normal looking boy, how could he have done this horrible thing? And she argues that it's good if we put the faces of normal people who are evil out front and center to, like, remember that evil just isn't, you know, it's not, people who are evil don't just wear badges of their evil, like, on their, like, tattooed people are not just inherently evil, like, people who wear hoodies are not inherently evil.
Yeah.
Black people certainly are not inherently evil.
So you're basically talking about stereotypes.
Right.
We're a very stereotype culture.
They, in saying that he looks normal, they're, you know,
having a stereotype of what who looks good and what looks bad is supposed to look like.
I mean, it's also, there's a degree that Ken is also digidestined, and it's them looking at him being like, well, he's just like us, which is weird because he isn't just like them. He's like a genius and is like so much better than them. So it's kind of weird that they say he's just like us, but, you know, it's not like he is.
But he's still a kid. He's still like a normal kid. Well, normal as in human.
Are you saying non-normal people aren't human?
I mean, I do like to harp on the he's just a kid like you and me thing, but that should be they have the capability of evil too.
Right, I feel like taking your talk about like people who do evil things don't look evil to the a bit further is that people who do evil things don't think they're doing evil things, except for like obvious. Well, there are mental issues.
You don't think Ken thinks he's not doing something evil?
I think that is a place where the show does a particularly bad job of portraying it. You know, it's very simplistic and cartoonish, which is, it's a cartoon, so. But, you know, it's like, I dislike that characterization because people do harm without realizing they're doing harm. And that is what is so frustrating about it. Like, we get these representations of people who are just like maniacally evil. And we think that as long as you're not maniacally evil, you can't be hurting people. And it's like the people who hurt people do it because they think they're helping people. And they just...
Or sometimes they don't care.
I mean, that's the problem with, like, you know, typically in our culture, like, white people who are criminals on TV are somewhat glorified, like Breaking Bad and stuff. But then black criminals are just going to be, like, random gangsters who are just bad because they're bad. Like, like, there's no moral complexity to them. Whereas, I guess I haven't seen enough Ken to know his moral complexities, but if he had a random spore planted in his mind, then I suppose he's not very morally complex.
So my entire segment is going to be about Ken, and I think there is stuff there, but there are lines that shine through that are just like, being like, I'm so evil! That are just like, no, like, come on, like... Yeah, I think I've talked before about how one thing I really like in media is when villains are sympathetic and not that we like agree with them, but that is an understandable position for them to have. Not a I'm gonna take over the world thing.
Right. I think the conclusion of the like white people are glorified thing is not that it's necessarily bad that happens. It's just that like other races, people who are criminals should have just as much moral complexity as they do.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the anti-hero, I mean, things like Breaking Bad, that's like a relatively new phenomenon, right?
Not new,
but like, popularity-wise, it being popular isn't it?
No. Phantom of the Opera.
I can't even think of other examples like Breaking Bad. Like, what?
Dracula. Frankenstein.
The Sopranos.
Yeah, The Sopranos.
Sopranos is what I thought of. The Sopranos is like a decade before Breaking Bad. I mean, there's like Dexter, True Blood, I assume. I've heard people say before, and I can't think of evidence to back it up, that it is a relatively new phenomenon. There's a wave of protagonists, morally gray protagonists, like Breaking Bad, and that it has always existed with things like Dracula and Phantom of the Opera and Frankenstein, but that it is much more popular nowadays, and I can't think of evidence to back that up, and I can't think of where I heard it. So.
I would disagree.
Yeah, this seems odd.
Seems sketchy. Yeah, and then I guess just with the morality stuff, like, stupid fighting episode. Well, this is again in episode 8, though, is like, well, first of all, it didn't make any sense because Davis didn't attempt to fight Ken at all when his friends, who were not really his friends because they were Bakemon, were tied up to the cliff.
Yeah.
Just like he didn't try to digivolve at all, right? Like,
I mean, I give him a little slack for this because he's only one kid against a giant Deltamon thing, but at the same time, yeah, he didn't even try.
There was no trying.
Yeah. There was not even an attempt.
Yeah, I found that really ridiculous. I actually thought it was like, I don't know, I read into it both ways, that it was Ken being silly and only thinking about Ken when he could have been thinking about a way to save his friends. Like, he kept thinking, like, I need to attack Ken, but oh god, I can't, because there's a Deltamon. And he could have just been like, well, I'll attack Deltamon. And then I was like, well, it shows that he's focused? I don't know. It was stupid. It was dumb.
Visually, it kind of reminded me of the, like, trolley problem of having random people tied to a track and, like...
I don't think it's a trolley problem.
Oh, yeah, it's called the trolley problem. I will prove it to you.
Thought it was supposed to be with trains. Charlie sounds so low stakes. Like, oh no, a Charlie's coming. I'll be run over in like a day. Oh no.
Listen, I didn't name this crap. It's just called the Charlie problem, okay?
Charlie's really?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I guess I've always heard about it as being trains.
Tied to the train tracks, yeah.
Trolley
problem. It says railway tracks, but like it's called the trolley problem. I don't know what you want from me, guys.
I think the term trolley has multiple uses and can refer to trains in some context.
Right.
I wanted to actually bring up, so this the theme that you have to make a choice between things, and if you don't make a choice, you'll lose everything. That in being hesitant,
oh yeah, that's
you
true.
Don't get anything. And I guess that's like it's a trope. I don't know what it's called on TV tropes or whatever, but like it's certainly common in a couple of different things. But I don't mind as much because like it actually is a decent lesson. It's not one of those things that just makes no sense in the real world. There are many situations where you really have to make a choice, and if you try to do both things, you'll do both things badly and fail. The most recent example I can think of using this was in Tokyo Ghoul, which this is played out in the last episode, so I'm not going to talk about the specifics. Tokyo Ghoul was a pretty good show that aired the past season, anime that aired the past season. So, and yeah, it's only in the last episode this is really explored, but it's a really good last episode. So yeah, you should check it out.
I mean, I don't know. I thought the interesting part was like, oh, it kind of seems like a trolley problem. But then like, I liked that, you know, Kari and TK, Yoli and Cody were all like yelling things at him. Like, Yoli's like, what are you doing? Save me.
Yeah, I appreciate Yoli.
Well, were the Bakuman making up their personalities and like trying to mimic them?
That didn't make any sense.
Those were really good Bakuman, you know? Yeah. They were really good at what they were doing.
I found it, so the obvious thing to expect is that Davis would save Kari, right? Like, there'd be no question. It's like, well, obviously I'm saving Kari.
Yeah. No, so, but he trusts all his friends, which is why the friend episode is so BS.
But does he trust them? He doesn't decide not to save them because he trusts that they'll get out of it.
No, but he loves all his friends. How about that?
Actually, I have to say something about Kari. If he saved Kari and not anyone else, Kari would hate him.
Right, like, that's what I thought too. Like, she'd be pissed. She'd be like, what the hell?
Why'd you save me?
Especially yeah, since true. That's, like, her personality trope of, like,
getting saved.
Being the sacrifice. No, being sacrificed.
Mm. Although not so much in this season as much.
Not so
much.
Yeah, what? Why doesn't Kari have weird light powers in this season? What's up?
Because she's older.
Wait until the next episode.
Oh, right. good times.
It's a testament to Davis that he, in the moment when he's actually questioned, it's actually not as easy. He doesn't only care about Kari, you know. When it comes down to it, he cares about the friends too.
I don't think that was ever really in question.
And then he decides to sacrifice himself, right?
So. Yes, he does. Because he's a good kid. He just sucks at everything.
He wanted to be like Ken, now he doesn't.
But that whole scenario, though, I forgot that it was back. Like, I should have remembered that, but I did not remember
it. You forgot?
Yeah, I thought they were really tied up. And
oh, yeah, me too. I didn't know that until it was revealed.
Well, it's been like 13 years since you've seen it. It's been 7 for me, so I should have.
It's been like 2 months for me.
But I like as it was happening, I was like, is Ken seriously going to murder these kids? Because
yeah.
Like, and then once they were revealed to be fake, I was like, OK, wait, he's seriously going to murder Davis? Like,
yeah, why not?
So Ken. At first, I had a lot of things to say about Ken. The first thing I want to talk about was something that I thought about for the last arc, but didn't have time to bring up. Surprisingly, when we recorded for 4 hours, I didn't bring up something. And it's the symbolism of Ken. And not so much Ken, but the things he employs. As we're introduced to Ken in the last arc, he's halting Digivolution. He's messing up the natural flow of the world. And it's kind of weird because the Digimon we see are always resisting the natural flow. They're always like using their friend's power to Digivolve outside of the natural evolution cycle. But Ken is restricting even Digimon like naturally growing up to adult.
I thought it was interesting that they actually said the word adult at some point.
In this, yeah, like Ken says adult stage. And I'm like,
he does.
I felt like a slip up.
is too good.
Well, it's like, I could see a writer familiar with the translation being like, well, using that terminology instead of the champion terminology. Because at least adult is like pretty clear in its translation. Like there's no other thing it could logically be. There's not, I guess the symbolism doesn't run that much, doesn't run that deep for that. But the control spires, actually no, do dark rings first. Dark rings are not subtle. Dark rings are like very clearly slavery. And I don't know, I don't think it's even fair to call it symbolism because it's just slavery. It is just slavery. but the control spires, like, I keep wondering what the control spires.
The evil Washington Monument.
Wait, like, is it representing, like, the influence of the United States? Is it representing capitalism? Is it phallic?
Will it make the monkeys evolve?
What?
Will it make the monkeys evolve?
Is that a reference?
Have you never seen 2001?
Oh.
The monolith?
Yeah.
It's a monolith.
So you're like, that's a symbol of progress, and this is a symbol of anti-progress.
It's the progress of the Digimon Emperor.
Wait, but he erects it to stop progress. You're like,
yeah, their progress, not his progress.
Yeah, I just think of the imagery of like the monkeys and there's a monolith and they advance. And for Ken, there are people, they're Digimon. He places the monolith and they cannot progress. I think it's interesting imagery. I don't think there's much beyond that. I don't think there's like a deep message that the show is trying to portray with that. I think it's just, it was, I think, pretty good choice in imagery. I want to talk a bit about how Ken approaches everything like a video game.
Donkey Madness?
that was silly. These episodes have had a lot more persistent jokes. Tangent. Like, they'll mention one thing and then keep mentioning about the episode. Like, in that episode, Donkey Madness is mentioned like 4 times. And in the one before it, they mentioned like pinching and being in dreams.
Well, I don't think they wanted to, I don't think they wanted to translate what that conversation was actually about.
Do you know what it was about?
I vaguely remember it being that the professor was actually asking Ken to let him publish something that Ken had done under the professor's name.
Oh.
I'm not entirely sure. But I think that's what that was about. It's been a while.
Interesting.
And, I mean, the Hebrew dub follows the English, so I don't... It's been a while.
It's a dub of a dub, basically.
It is.
Double dub. Anyway. Right, so the way he approaches everything like a video game, and that's a bit of a spoiler. We find out more about that later. But in the same way that the OVA, the original movie, Digimon Adventure, was like a realization of what having a Digimon VPET would be like in the real world, I feel like Ken is a realization of what a Pokemon game would be. Like, he is enslaving all these Digimon and becoming their master and building up an army. And he's making progress. Like, the way he builds up his control spires, it reminds me so much of a video game. And I feel bad, like, leaping ahead to knowing that he treats it like a video game. But it feels so obvious to me. I can't really resist it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's trying to say anything about that, though. You know, it's not... The fact that he's represented as being so evil kind of takes away any of that. Like, it's not like he is thinking, like, especially being an emperor, there was so much subtlety that could be in that. He could be thinking he's building up an empire for good, but everyone really hates it or something. But instead it's like, I'm the evil Digimon Emperor. Rah! Which is like not how a player would approach a game at all unless they were doing something.
Well, not at that age.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would love playing Team Rocket.
I guess I was thinking, like, if he were thinking of himself that evilly, he would be, like, role-playing, which...
Which I think goes without saying with his get-up.
But it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's like, he seems to really believe it. He doesn't seem to be putting on act.
Mm.
He's giving video games a bad name. He's furthering stereotypes.
So back to like why he thinks he's so evil and keeps saying he's evil and stuff. Cody has a line where he says in episode 9, I don't understand why such a talented and smart person would want to use their talents to hurt others. And we mentioned this briefly before, but it's like people like that don't want to hurt others, but they can hurt others by just not understanding people and not trying to understand people. And I guess it's just a waste of potential. Like, I wish, considering how much complexity Ken gets, it's like, oh, you were so close. Like, could you not make him have, like, somewhat noble goals in taking over the digital world?
No.
I feel like he does know he's being evil. I don't understand why you...
No, I know. That's the problem. He shouldn't, like...
You think that he shouldn't because he's too young, but he's a genius.
No. I'm saying that no realistic characterization of real people would someone be okay with knowing they're so evil. No one thinks they are that evil and keeps doing it.
Which is why I would say he's putting on an act.
But I don't think he is. You know, like, he's fully into it.
Now?
I thought that moment where he's like watching his interview on the news or whatever, and he like looks so somber. I definitely thought that like took him out of the act for a while. Like he's like, yeah, this is the real me.
Which one is the real him?
The one that's evil?
The one that was in the interview.
Oh.
Really? I had the complete opposite perception. Like, it clearly seems like he's acting good and like, I'm so nice.
I would say both are an act, and he's doing what he's doing as the Digimon Emperor in order to like get that foul taste out of his mouth.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Because at least this is enjoyable and fun.
Right. I always thought it was like him taking out his anger.
And he's not being manipulated by adults.
I would say they're both an act, but the way that he like seems so somber while watching it is like him thinking.
So what I read into that was that, so Ken has this like huge superiority complex, right? That he thinks he's better than everyone else, that he has nothing to learn from other people because he's so much better than them. They're all ants, which is ironic because he's a bug Digimon. But anyway.
Well, I think that's on purpose.
Yeah, right, exactly. And he just thinks he's above everyone else. And
okay, yes.
He feels like he wants to win at everything. And the digital world is something he's been winning at for a while. Like he took over, and then these new Digimon come in and they start beating him, and he starts losing all the time. And in the real world, he is still seen as this like perfect genius boy who's like good at everything. But in the back of his head, he's like, I'm still losing the digital world. Like, this is the thing that, bit of a spoiler alert, it is, I think explained later that like it kind of is what gives him confidence initially, is doing stuff in the digital world. And it's this like thought in the back of his head that even though people in the real world keep telling him that he's so good, he knows he's a failure. Mm-hmm. Or he knows that he's failing. And I feel like that is why he starts to invest more in the digital world and runs away from home. And it colors a bunch of different scenes. Like, there's that scene where he's watching the interview and he's like, keeps getting praise in the interview, and he keeps looking at it being like, but I'm not that good.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And his dad at dinner is like, oh, you were so good in the interview. Like, you got like, the ladies are gonna like you so much. And he's just like, I can't listen to this. I need to go.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of like weird. Cause I think as a kid, I was just like, oh, yeah, that's like his dad. But now I'm like, I can kind of sympathize with that. Like, I've, you know, being told, people like from the outside just like think it's amazing. And
I mean, this is a thing. Yeah. This is a thing that most people feel, I think, at some point in their life.
Right. It's the, what's the word for it in
pressure?
No.
People are under pressure.
What's the name for like when you think you're not as good as people say you are?
Imposter syndrome.
Imposter syndrome. Yes. I don't know if Ken would really fit into the imposter syndrome, because I mean, that's the thing. From our perspective, he's like, he has so many achievements in the real world. How can he not see he's so amazing?
No, I can see it.
Yeah, like from his perspective, he's like, but I'm failing the digital world. Like, that is what gives him pride, and he's not doing it well.
Well, it's him against a lot of other kids.
Right, but he thinks he's better than all of them combined. Like, he thinks he is so good. The superiority complex, especially from what I remember of what happens to Ken later, it is like totally flipped on its head.
Yeah, I mean, that's usually how it goes. The people who are very condescending towards others are actually often very insecure in their own whatever.
And what I remember of Ken later is that he, you know, eventually comes to a position where he like, all he wants to do is learn from others, and is like, I am not as good as you, and I can only hope to be as good as you.
I'm not sure it's exactly like that, but he does, you know, have a lot of guilt stored up.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly.
I was talking about how, like, they're, you know, beating in the digital world, and how Runaround, the song, fits into that.
What?
So it was obvious in the soccer match, they play Runaround as he's, like, running around Ken, or as he's running around Davis.
That was too on the nose. Get the hell out of here.
That was, and they, like, kick it up, too, because they kick balls. Like, ugh, that was, like, punching in the nose. It was so on the nose.
I like that in the fighting episode, they played that stupid rap, Digimon, we fight to win.
Oh, God, I forgot about that. But, I mean, I like how the running around thing, in the real world, Ken is the one that runs around them. But in the digital world, the kids are the ones that run around Ken.
So deep.
So deep.
This place is so new to me. I have so many unanswered questions.
Why is Davis's room so clean now? There was that one episode where it was like super dirty. Who cleaned his room? Kari? No.
Probably his mom.
Maybe Demivimon does.
No.
No.
With his stubby little arms?
Maybe it's not the same room.
How come Hawkmon is allowed out of jail if Defumon only wants girls?
Yeah, that was weird. It's like he forgot that he was I don't know. I think the writers forgot that he was a guy, too.
That was complicated.
Digimon don't have gender.
Why does Ken have a nickname? Why is it Ken the Rocket Ichijoji? They, like, called him the Rocket, like, 8 times during that episode. I was like, what is going on here?
Yeah, I don't know what... Why does Ken want his name to be the Digimon Emperor?
Okay, that's inconsistent.
Well, I would rather be the Digimon Emperor than Ken the Rocket Ichijoji.
Wait, okay, no. So in episode 7, Ken says to Wormmon, never call me anything but Master. In episode 10, he says, would you stop calling me Ken? I'm the Digimon Emperor. It's like, he needs to make up his mind. Is he Master or Digimon Emperor?
He is Master, the Digimon Emperor.
There's some line where he's like, my name is the Digimon Emperor. And I'm like, no, your name is not the Digimon Emperor. Also, they don't know how to say Ken Ichijoji.
They don't?
No, that's just Yoli.
Ichijuji.
That was just Yoli that time.
No, it was like some announcer said it. And then like Yoli says it 2 seconds later and they're completely different.
Yes.
Why did Angemon de-digivolve once they went into the dome?
Because it was a control spire.
No, but that is not how it works.
The other Digimon stay champions.
Oh, that's true.
Andrew and I discussed this briefly, and we think it has something to do with Patamon's relative power levels and also TK's relative maturity levels.
Oh, wait, actually, I guess this is kind of an answer question. I aggregated the ages of all the characters in like a easier to understand format than the Digimon Wiki. So I have this in the show notes, this Google spreadsheet. And did you know that in the dub, Izzy is the same age as the kids of the season? He is 12 and they are all 12.
Well, that's not right.
Nope. Actually, Kari's a year older than Izzy.
What?
That's not right.
Kari is a year older than Izzy and Mimi.
No.
Kari is 13 and Izzy and Mimi are 12. So one problem with these numbers, which I pulled from the Digimon Wiki, is they might be pulled from different times of the year since O2 starts in the beginning of the school year and ends after, I don't know, like after winter at least. So they could be pulling from different parts of the year, and that's why, you know, like one person's date saying they're 12 could be from the beginning of the year and the person saying they're 13 could be later. But it's still, things are much more consistent in the Japanese version. So I also listed what level of school they go to. So in the Japanese version, Davis, Yoli, Cody, TK, Kari all go to elementary school, and Matt, Izzy, Sora, Joe, and Mimi go to middle school.
Yeah.
And in the dub, it's a different because like we're used to different levels of school. Like middle for us elementary is like zero, or up until fourth grade. It kind of varies, I guess. And middle is up until 8th grade, and then high school is 9th and higher. And in Japan, it's high school is 10 and higher, and middle is 7, 8, 9. Elementary is up to 6. So in the US dub, people who go to middle school are Davis, Yoli, TK, Kari, Izzy, and Mimi. People who go to elementary school are Cody. People who go to high school are Ty, Matt, Sora, and Joe.
I like how Cody is plural.
What?
I like how you used R and then you just say Cody.
Yeah. I was confused. I was like, there has to be more than one. Oh, wait, there's only one? What?
Poor Cody.
So, yeah, these ages are just... these ages are just sort of like extrapolating from this information. In the dub, Joe is 17. And Mimi is 12.
What?
That is creepy. Like, as a 17-year-old, I was a teaching assistant at my synagogue, and I taught, in scare quotes, 12-year-olds, and that is creepy to have hints of relationship. Also, they did not like Digimon, so I'm still bitter about that. This is my rant about, like, all these ages are unanswered questions. Like they, most of the time, they made the characters older from the Japanese to the English.
Mm-hmm.
Except for Mimi and Izzy. Yeah, I don't understand why.
This is not an unanswered question. It's just a question to you. Did you feel like, I guess in episode 8 or whatever, that they were trying to imply that Izzy was like the antithesis to Ken? That's the vibe I got.
I didn't get that vibe that they were purposely going for that, but I thought of it as like, you know, he is Ken, but not obnoxious or like not outspoken.
Not evil.
I guess not recognized. Like, I wasn't thinking of his evil side. I was thinking of the fact that like Izzy is the one who's like a genius, but doesn't get recognition for it. He's not like labeled a genius. He's just the dude who's around and can also hack a satellite or whatever. I don't know if the show was actually going for that.
I don't even know what I didn't pick up on this.
No. I don't know. There was just like a shot of like Ken in the digital world And they're talking about how he's evil or whatever. And then it pans to Izzy in the real world.
Oh.
And it seemed to be some sort of implication.
I just thought of it because Izzy was there when they were learning about him at some point.
Mm.
Or hearing about him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Why? Okay, so after School Greymon destroys the control spire, Ken then summons an army of Dark Tyrannomon and controls them with dark rings, even though there's no control spire.
I don't know.
Like, what? Like...
Oh, I forgot to mention this in the section, but in the morality section, but I hated that, you know, to trip you up, that's Starmon. You think Starmon is good because he has no outward signs that he's evil, because you can't see his dark ring under his hat, and normally their eyes glow red. And I just really hated that they used the cheap trick of, like, we covered his dark ring, and then as soon as we reveal it, now his eyes are red.
Yeah.
As a visual trope that he's evil, and I'm like, really? So dumb.
I mean, I guess I didn't mind that so much because his actions were different. His behavior was totally different. He was clearly putting up an act to be nice and like, I'm just going to give you milk. And later it was all like, I don't even remember because that episode was stupid. But he changed his behavior.
Sure, he does change behavior.
I don't think I even liked that episode as a kid at all. Like,
I think I did, actually.
What?
Yeah, I feel like I did.
Because I like cowboys.
We should have had that, like, an entrance question to this podcast.
Did you like this as a kid? If you did, you're out of the podcast.
Get out.
Well, I guess I'm out of the podcast.
Wait, do you still like it?
I don't hate it as much as you guys.
All right, it's true. You're out. Get out.
Bye.
Yeah, I mean, I can see not hating it, but liking it?
It's a big difference.
Yeah.
Why does Matt blame Davis for his own stupidity in episode 7?
Episode 7.
When he ends up on a date with June?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
I think Matt also forgot about that.
Oh, wait. Why was Matt talking to Mimi in episode 7?
That was just like...
There was like a one-off line about him talking to Mimi?
It just was.
Just the writers.
Yeah, I think they wanted to be like, don't forget about Mimi. She's still here.
Shipping.
I think they wanted to... I think originally Matt did not volunteer to go talk to June. And they had to like cover up in the dub. I don't know why he
didn't do it. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, why he suddenly just looked freaked out and had to turn around and run away.
Yeah, that was weird. I was thinking, like, why would he run away if he wasn't to talk to Mimi? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I did not have time to investigate these things in the Japanese version.
It goes dialogue draft, where we go around and each pick our top two funniest, most ridiculous, or most touching lines from the episodes. You, my dearest audience, get to choose the winner in, like, comments or something.
You changed the script to dearest audience?
Dearest audience.
We're leaving this in. Keep talking.
Jeff thinks this is like a sports draft, but that's because he doesn't understand sports.
I do. I understand soccer. They taught me about this episode.
Yeah, they taught you about soccer in this episode.
Yeah.
They taught you can score 3 hat tricks.
Wait, so what's the order?
You, Jeff, Ashley, me.
Yes! Mine's pretty long anyway, and this is a pretty popular meme now. Well, actually, debatable, but it's a meme-ish.
Memes in this one aren't that popular.
I know. This is during the soccer match. At this point, Ken's obviously playing, and... Oh, wait, it's right when Ken starts playing. So Kari says...
He's just a kid like you, Davis!
You gotta outrun him! You could do it, and even if you can't, we won't think any less of you, man!
Some nice friends you got there, Davis.
I did write that down, but I cut out all the kids. I was just like...
Yeah. Nice friends you got there, Davis.
He did say it really creepily.
So that's a meme? It sounded really familiar, and I wasn't sure where I'd seen it.
It's kind of... the video's on YouTube, and then some people on Tumblr love it.
Mm. Okay, so this is also from the soccer game, as are all 4 of my top choices.
Oh my goodness.
Well, not that soccer game, all from that episode, at least. Okay, so it's Davis has already started playing, I think. I'm not sure about that. Davis is there getting ready, and they're waiting for Ken. They're like, is Ken not going to show up? So then Kari says,
where is he?
And TK says,
is he? No, we're waiting for Ken.
I wrote that one down too.
I did.
The writers, they must have had that on a board for like a year. Like, is he? Like, that sounds like, is he? Can we use that?
Yeah.
Like, finally, we can use it.
Mine is from episode 7. What's happening in episode 7? I guess they're fighting Andromon. Digmon says,
"Still, you pile of scrap metal! Gold rush!"
And then it, like, doesn't work or whatever. And then he's like,
"Hey, that comment about scrap metal was just a joke!"
And, like, the way he said it and the face that he made was so...
It was
super weird for Digimon. Jeff, you have to take a screenshot of it and, like,
yeah.
Well, I guess it's going to be a thing that I have to screenshot, actually.
I'm going. Okay, mine's from episode 10, and they're like, "Where's Yoli?" And Izzy's like, "She's cleaning her glasses." And Davis says,
"Big as her glasses are, that could take hours."
And I was like, "Wow, you went there. You went there, Davis." Although her glasses are really big. I've never seen anyone who wasn't, like, a grandmother.
But the jokes in that episode were so strange. Like, half of that episode had to be completely different in Japanese.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, I'll do one from episode 9. There's this point where they're talking about Ken and at the computers or something, and Yoli says,
"Look at his IQ! He could program my computer any day!"
I was like, those are some weird sexual innuendos, Yoli.
Yeah, I was like, they're showing, like, they're, like, promoting female sexuality, kind of.
That's true. I did kind of like that Yoli was allowed to show her female sexuality.
But it's, like, only through computer metaphors or jokes.
I'm okay with that, too.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
More proof that Yoli should have had the crest of knowledge.
Although, it is kind of weird that she's, like, she's the kind of hackery person, and she's like, "Well, I'll let him program my computer." Like, that's, like, I don't know.
Whatever. It's a progress. Go, Jeffrey.
Okay, so mine is from episode 8, the best episode. Thank you, Charlotte Fullerton. I think it's after the soccer game, and they're like, I guess they're not going to go to the Digiworld that day or something, and they're like, "Oh my god, there's a control spire. Where did that come from?" And Kari says,
"What's it doing there?"
And then Gatchaman says,
"Controlling, spiring, the usual."
Oh, yeah. I did like that.
Yeah, I almost picked that one.
There are just too many quotes in episode 8 to...
Yeah.
I think I'm going to have to take a Tentomon one, which might make Ash angry. I guess it's the beginning of episode 10, where they go to the digital world, and Matt has to tell Tentomon to find Gurumon or whatever. And Tentomon says, "Welcome to my treehouse."
Oh no, you took mine!
Because Ash is like all the Tentomon things, and it's the best thing that Tentomon said.
There was no Gomon this episode, this arc.
Yeah,
so.
That's why.
It's true. There was no Gomamon in this arc. I have nothing to say.
So Tentomon says,
"Welcome to my treehouse. Actually, it's not much of a treehouse anymore since Skull Greymon disintegrated it. Now it's more of a twig house. That's okay. I was planning on redecorating anyway."
I love Tentomon. I'll do my last one from episode 10 also. Agumon's just escaped, and Ken's like,
"How did Agumon get away?"
And Wormmon says,
"An escape clause in his contract."
And it's like, Wormmon, you're great. You're great. How does Ken not appreciate you?
I totally don't remember that.
Oh no, he totally said that.
I think I misheard that and thought it was like, I don't know what I did not catch that one. That was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Digimon writers. You and your witty dialogue.
I feel like we started the Ridiculous Dialogue Draft to be like, these are the really terrible lines.
Yeah, but now we pick the really good ones.
Yeah, the good. And then sometimes there's one that's like, that's so terrible, it's really funny, but like,
yeah,
that's kind of rare.
You can find detailed links and images of everything we've discussed in this episode in our show notes at podigist.com/202. Check out our comments section on the site if you want to send feedback or see cool thoughts from other listeners. You can also leave comments on the Digimon subreddit and at With a Will if you found us through there. Vote for your favorite dialogue draft pick on the episode page, and we'll announce the winner next episode. As always, we'd love if you supported the show by leaving a written review on iTunes. We have our first ratings from the UK this time. Huge thanks to Grace of Aeons and Cedar Mill. We're Podigist on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr, so you can follow us on social media to hear more about the podcast between each episode. Next time on Podigist, in episode 13, Akari reads a little too much H.P. Lovecraft and has a vivid dream when she falls asleep with Serial Experiments Lane on TV. Bye.
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 And remember, never stop digivolving. How do we transition back to the episode? I'm drinking water in front of a microphone, apparently.
And now back to... present, past talk. It's all so very confusing.
And now back to Digiball 2000.
He likes winning and he likes big Digimon. He likes
Ashley
being strong.
Ashley, you're kicked off the podcast.
Did she just make a comment?
That I didn't say anything.
Did you just laugh suggestively?
No, she said,
I see. It's okay. Ashley, the fan fiction is there for you.
Yeah.
I just thought of a parody song and I'm not going to say
No.
Don't.
Ash, move on.
Don't. We're not going there.
Why do all the Digimon just have like random poison tattoos? It's so strange. Anyway.
It's like a cheap version of Netflix.
Netflix is on everything, so.
I know.
I wonder if it's out for. I wonder if Netflix is on the new 15th anniversary of VPets. Probably is.
Why is Wormmon called Wormmon? He's a caterpillar.
Actually, that's an unanswered question.
Is it?
Is he a caterpillar?
He's definitely not a worm.
Yeah, he's anything but a worm, at least.
Well, worm used to mean many different things.
It did, actually.
He could be a silkworm.
He's a dragon.
Well, he could be a silkworm or a... it's the only one I can think of.
Wait, what are his attacks again?
Sticky net. He's not a silkworm, though. He evolves into, like, a bee.
Stupid Wormmon.
Now, all I'm thinking of is Parasite.
What is Wormmon? Wormmon, what are you?
I'm sticking to my guns that he's a caterpillar.
He is a larva.
Mm.
And he is a bagworm moth, because it also makes sense when you go back to his other stuff, which comes later.
His other armored evolutions?
Well, his prior forms.
Prior forms? Like, smaller than Wormmon?
Yeah.
Oh, he's a bagworm?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
We have a lot of Wormmon in our house.
It's true. They're cute. I like them.
They're weird.
That's gross. What are you talking about?
Do you have pimento bugs?
What?
Pimento bugs? Is that what they're called, right?
Palmetto bugs?
Palmetto, yeah.
Is that what a palmetto is?
No, a palmetto bug is a cockroach.
Oh my god, I looked at a picture. Oh my god.
A picture of what?
A palmetto bug.
Yeah, we have those.
It's the worst part of Florida.
Oh. Wait, what? Isn't that just
a cockroach?
A cockroach,
yes.
Oh, but they're everywhere.
Ash, remember when the silverfish lived in our bathroom?
No, stop.
Remember when I had to catch centipedes all the time?
Oh, yeah. Remember the centipedes try to take, like, showers with us?
It was weird. Yeah. Remember? Didn't we have to call for a rat one time, too?
Oh, yeah. We had a mouse. It was fun.
Wait, Jeff, do you have a fear of bugs?
Not like irrational. I mean, not like a phobia, but like, yes, I have a fear of bugs. Ashley, the plot of the first episode of Parasite revolves around the fact that a bug tries to enter his brain through his ear canal, but because he's wearing headphones, it can't get in. So it goes into his nose and then he wakes up and knocks it out. And
ew.
But if he weren't wearing headphones, it would have gone through his ear. So I should sleep with headphones on is the moral
of the
story.
It's just going to go through your nose.
No, but he woke up because it like went through his nose. So he knocked it out. Because then it went through his hand, ate his hand and replaced his hand. So.
All right.
It's a good show.
No. Davis.
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 So Davis.
Avis.
Avis.
This is...
We actually mostly covered everything I wanted to say. We can skip me.
That sounded sad.
No, I'm good. I'm good. I'll have plenty to talk about when we get to more Ken.
I had things I wanted to mention about Davis, but they're not really, like, they're not important. I mean, it's mostly just, like, his characterization was terrible. It seemed totally out of character.
Yeah, that's basically, like, once I realized that the core of my trouble was that one episode, I was okay.
The Metal Greymon / Stormer friendship thing.
Yeah.
He gets better after that, right?
Yeah. I mean, Davis really starts to shine later on, after they beat Ken.
So I recently watched Hope Chapman's review of 02, and the way she described it was that Davis has no development whatsoever outside of this episode.
He doesn't. I would agree with that.
So how does he shine?
But I grow to appreciate that, and I think the rest of them do too.
Okay, I'll have to see how that goes. Well, anyway, I derailed it with a theory that I can't back up or even cite, so... edit that out.
I love when Jeff edits out his mistakes.
I get to come off better by cutting out when I sound bad. I do. Sometimes I edit out when, like, I feel bad, actually. Sometimes I edit out things you say because it's like you, like, interject something and then, like, don't follow it up. And I'm like, I don't want to feel like I'm silencing you, but...
But I'm just going to silence you.
Because I feel like it's like if I showed you that clip, you'd be like, oh, yeah, that was weird.
You can silence me whenever. I don't care.
I don't even put your track in.
Oh, okay.
That's all I had to say about Ken. Did you guys have anything to pitch in? See, I said guys, and now I feel bad.
You should. I am not a guy.
Do you guys and Ashley have anything to say?
But Ashley, you're one of the guys. You play I'm sports.
Yeah.
You're on a Digimon podcast, a brocast.
Brocast.
Welcome to the brocast. What?
Well, there are literal brothers on it, I guess.
Whoa, so
Whoa.
Deep.
Whoa. Say what?
Oh, snap.
Pixel's my bro, and he's kind of on the podcast.
Sometimes he is.
I don't know where he is.
Let's get this over with before Ash kills me.
Well, it's you should stop talking then.
he'll kill us all. It's okay.
Eventually, one day, I will.
I'm going to kill all of you first. Anyway.
Wait, so what's the order?
You, Jeff, Ashley, me.
Yes! Mine's pretty long anyway.
Oh, no.
It's actually a whole dialogue-ish thing.
Oh, God, Andrew.
Like, the whole episode?
No, yes, the whole episode.
Episode 8, I choose episode 8.
Because if you liked it, then you should have put a spiral on it. If they have your will, then you should have put a spiral on it. Don't be mad once they turn into Skullgrammon. Because if you liked it, then you should have put a spiral on it.